This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
So 226 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John.
And tonight we're recording on a Saturday night, waiting to be let into the drive-in to go watch a double feature of The Evil Dead and Pieces from Grindhouse Releasing.
So we're sitting in Mike's van right now. We got about an hour before the gates open, so we're going to record for a bit, and then you're going to hear us go, oh, hold on, we're pulling up, and then we'll pause, and you won't hear any kind of difference, but we're probably going to take a little while to stretch our legs and, you know, urinate and get our snacks out. But yeah, so we figured while we were killing some time, because then, you know, of course, once we get in there, the show doesn't start till 8:20. So we could just sit here and scroll through our phones like a bunch of 12-year-olds,
or
we could record a podcast.
Yeah.
By the way, are you using Wi-Fi or because you can use my hotspot?
Oh, no, I'm on data.
Okay.
Yeah, I got unlimited now.
So okay.
I'm good. I've stepped into Tidal.
Sounds good.
Yep. So, anyhow, let's just start with Dark, because that's the one that's the most complicated. That's the one that takes up a chunk of time, and we have the time to talk about Dark right now without getting interrupted, at least.
So this was the episode 7 and 8 of this...
The end of season 2.
Yes.
Last two episodes of season 2.
And, oh boy.
Yeah, holy shit. I messaged you after I watched it. Have you watched Dark yet? No. Okay.
And then when I got done, I sent your message, and I'm like, whew, Dark. Wow.
I was like, yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
Episode 7, The White Devil.
The White Devil. And that does get brought up a few times.
Well, it's essentially Egon calling his daughter that.
Yeah, because he has heard of the White Devil.
Yeah.
Wasn't Ulrich talking about the White Devil? Oh, no. It was, what's his name there? Helgi.
Helgi was talking about the White Devil, yes.
Yeah.
I think Egon related the White Devil to the witch that he met that day.
Yes.
You know, which was Claudia, old Claudia, his daughter old.
Mm-hmm.
And which is sad because Claudia was just trying to stop her dad from dying.
Yeah.
Because she got that news article saying she was going to die.
Now that's 87 Claudia.
87 Claudia, yeah. That's what she was trying to do, was stop her dad from dying. She got that news article. She was very sidetracked by that. Very just kind of focused on that. And ultimately, her preventing his death caused his death.
Yeah, because the article had basically said that, you know, he was found in his apartment dead from an unknown cause.
Yeah.
It was one of those, like, you tried to stop this, and by trying to stop it, you did it.
Yeah.
You were the cause all along.
Yep. And it's sad because he knew he was sick, knew he was dying from cancer, couldn't let being a police officer go, couldn't let this investigation go with Ulrich.
Right.
Why was old Ulrich and his son, or as we know, Michael, why was he taking him to the caves? What's in those caves? We need to have someone investigate those caves. And Claudia's like, you need to stop. You need to let it go. Like, stop. Just, like, she's trying to be loving and caring, but his obsession annoyed her to the point where they got into a scuffle, and he fell backwards through this counter extension table thing.
Yeah,
it was hard to describe. But he got a head injury, essentially.
Yep.
And with his frailty of his illness and having chemo and everything, that was enough to kind of do him in. And when she's kind of checking on him and putting her hands around his head and be like, I'm sorry, stay with me, Papa, etc. He looks at her and he points and he says, White Devil.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's got to be horrifying for Claudia.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially considering that she would later become old Claudia, going back to see young Egon.
Yeah.
and him looking at her, and because that's where this episode actually opened, was in 1954, and they were doing the autopsy of the body of old Claudia. And
yes.
Egon was like, hey, I recognize her. She was in the office. And they point out that, you know, she has two different colored eyes, like his daughter. But they noted that her body was heavily irradiated.
Yes.
You know, and he's like, you know, check this out. And they're trying to pass it off like maybe she worked with radiation, or maybe she was a Geiger counter person or something like that. Let's see. I'm trying to follow along my notes, because once again, I took a lot of notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the opening of this episode was a lot of people looking very regretful. They do a lot of shots in this show, in the opening and closing especially, where they do, like, juxtaposed people next to each other.
Yeah.
Or, like, people in a room. Like, you saw Hannah standing in the room with old Jonas, watching him sleep, and she's holding his suitcase.
Yes.
And you're like, is this metaphorical or not? No, she took his suitcase. Because
she took the time machine. Yep.
Now, this was very odd because, and I know we're going to jump around here, but basically what she did was she went back in time to 1954.
Yep.
And went to young Egon and said, I am Ulrich's wife. And you've got him in an insane asylum. Or she basically said, you know, I know that you've got him somewhere. Can I see him? He'll talk to me.
Yeah, she said, you have my husband. I saw his picture. And she identified herself as Katarina Nielsen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he takes her to the insane asylum. And he's like, look, he hasn't talked. You know, we picked him up months ago. Why didn't you come forward? And she's like, well, I didn't know if I could believe it. So she meets up with Ulrich. The guards walk him out there. And she's like, look, it's me, Hannah. And he's like, He kind of snaps out of it for a bit. And he's like, Hannah, get me out of here. Get me out of here. And then she flips the switch.
Oh, yeah. She's like, did you ever love me? Will you leave her for me?
If I asked you right now to leave Katarina, would you? And
for some reason, he hesitated.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at first, I think he's snapping out of the craziness. But then he hesitated a little too long. But then he goes, yes, ask me again. I'll leave her. I love you. I only want... Because he recognizes, like, this is the only way I'm going to get out of here.
This is the only way he's getting out of here. Yes.
Except it's not. Because she basically says, rot in here. And then he's calling out to her, Hannah, Hannah, I love you. Hannah, I love you. And Egon's like, her name's Katarina.
Right.
Which only further cements the fact that he's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because he had asked her on the way over there, he goes, how come he said that he had a kid? You said that you don't have any kids. And she's like, I don't know. So she's really reinforcing Ulrich being crazy.
Yes.
And he basically gets dragged back screaming and kicking. And Hannah goes with Egon back to the station and tells him that she's looking for a fresh start.
Yeah, she's, I mean, I'm going to hang out here for a while.
And she's making goo-goo eyes at him.
Right. And so it leads me to believe that she's going to try to make a new life for herself in 1954.
Yep.
Which, if she does, and there was something that was said in episode 8 that makes me go back to this moment with Hannah. And it's like, is she going to somehow be a mother of someone that we've already met?
Right.
Because she stayed back there now, whereas...
It would officially not be the weirdest one, because the weirdest one comes up in episode 8.
Yeah, that is the...
We're getting there.
Did you write down what Adam said verbatim? Because I did.
No.
I did.
I'm looking forward to that, because, yeah. So, basically, we've now back in present day, we've got Charlotte talking to her husband, and she kind of lays it all out. She's like, look, I met Noah. He said, I'm his kid, and the world is going to end in an apocalypse tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that's it. We're screwed. And they're down in the bunker trying to piece all this stuff together and figure out, okay, who are we going to save? How are we going to do this? Martha wants to go look for Jonas, but the rest of the kids are like, no,
yeah,
you know, we want to figure out what's going on right now. We don't care about Jonas. In fact, Bartosz says that Jonas is the one responsible for all this shit.
Yep.
So we don't care. He can go fuck himself.
Marta does run in 2020. Marta does run into adult Jonas.
Yep. I have a theory, by the way. I wanted to wait until the end of these two episodes played out before I said it. And I want to say it right now because it's in my notes here. I don't think Adam is old Jonas. I think Adam is old Bartosz.
Okay. Yeah.
They actually look more similar.
Yep.
And he has every reason to hate Jonas and would have had a reason to get Jonas to try to kill himself by stopping Mikkel from going back in time and never existing, because he hates the fact that Martha likes him.
Yep.
And so that's my theory, is that Bartosz is actually Adam, because he knows more about what's going on than he's letting on.
Okay, I can get behind that theory, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyhow,
she meets up with old Jonas.
She meets up with old Jonas at Hannah's house, looking for Hannah, and Katarina shows up.
Well, before that, she basically has a tender moment with him, because he proves that he's old Jonas.
Yeah,
she talks about the glitch in the Matrix with deja vu.
And, yeah.
You know, she's got the touching little, you know.
Oh, and I think he has the medallion or something.
Yep. Well, he asks her about the medallion. She's like, I knew it was you that showed up on the beach.
Yeah.
He's like, yes. And they have a touching moment. Then Katarina shows up.
And basically is like, oh, that's your nephew.
Yeah.
You're his aunt.
Your brother went back in time and is his father and gave birth to him. So you're his aunt.
Yeah.
And he better keep his sick, perverted hands off you.
Yeah, Katarina's got fucking problems.
They all have problems.
So we find out why Clausen's so hot for trot for Alexander.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's because that Clausen's brother is Alexander Kohler. And Clausen's last name was Kohler, but he took his mother's last name when they divorced. And he literally tracked down every Alexander Kohler he could find to confront them to find out if it was his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And our Alexander that we know of, his last name...
Claudia's husband.
Claudia's husband, yeah. You know, he took his wife's last name.
Oh, no, sorry, Regina's husband.
Yeah, Regina's husband, yeah. He took his wife's last name so that she never, you know, Claudia's son-in-law, basically. And
but Clausen had gotten a letter delivered to him from a friend, air quotes.
Yeah.
It said answers about your brother.
Or in Whedon.
Yep.
And we go into more detail about that. But basically, we know that Alexander, that we know him and his buddy, they robbed someplace or whatever. It looks like Alexander got killed and this guy took Alexander's identity and continued living. So.
Yep. And And basically, Clausen tells him, he's like, yeah, you're not my brother, but you know what happened to him, and leaves him to rot in the cell. Yep.
When after Claudia accidentally kills her dad, Egon, and goes home, 2020 Jonah walks in.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's been hung and gone to the future in the past and this and that, that Jonah, middle Jonah, whatever you want to call him, he arrives with a key, and she's like, how did you get in my house? Why do you have a key? And he's like, you gave it to me. Well, a different version of you gave it to me.
Yep.
And he said, and basically tells her, there's still time, we may be able to change events. And they go off together. And that's kind of episode 7. That's episode 7, kind of in a big nutshell. Episode 8.
Yeah, he says that they need to go, they don't have much time.
Yeah.
Tells her that the next time it doesn't have to happen like this. It's time for us to go to the future.
Yes.
So the next cycle, he says they can break this and her dad doesn't have to die.
Yes.
So, yes, episode 8 was called Endings and Beginnings, which was interesting because episode 1 of this season was called Beginnings and Endings.
Oh, nice.
So episode 8 starts off in the future with Elizabeth looking at pictures she had buried away. She had pictures of her family, and she has a picture of Noah and his wife and their baby.
Yeah, which we know is Charlotte.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we will soon learn who the mother is, who the wife is, the redheaded woman. We get to see Noah talking to his younger self, and he's basically saying, if you knew what I know now, you would never go down this path. However, I can't tell you this because you have to go through all this stuff that I went through to bring me to this point that I'm at right now so that I can move forward and do what I have to do. God, I love this show.
Yeah.
So then young Noah is sent into a room with what we assume is Magnus and Francisca.
Yes.
Back in 1921.
Yeah.
And he's warped away.
It is confirmed by the end of the episode that's Magnus and Francesca.
Which the weird thing is if you look at them as kids, there's a staggering height difference between the two of them.
Yeah.
But then back in 1921, they're almost the same height.
Well, probably, you know, she just grew. It happens.
We will find out later that when they take young Noah into the room there, they warp him into 2020.
Yes.
They warp him into the present day. But we'll get to that.
Well, there's a scene where... This is where it's fucked up. So there's a scene later on with Adam and Noah, right? No, Adam and Jonas.
Mm-hmm.
Before they send him off.
Yes.
Where they're looking at pictures. And basically, and this is why this person knows so much. He basically says,
let me pull up that note instead. I got a different spot on my phone. Nope, that's not it either. There we go.
Isn't technology great?
It is. Oh, no, no. He's talking to Noah, not Jonas. He's talking to Noah. Yes. And he says, Charlotte is your daughter. She is Elizabeth's daughter and her mother.
Yeah. So Elizabeth, the deaf girl.
Yes. Who's in 2054.
She is Charlotte's daughter.
Right.
And then in the future, well.
No, in the past, she's Charlotte's mother.
But the way that it works is at the end of this episode, we see Noah show up in the bunker.
Yeah.
Who is approximately, the young Noah is approximately the right age to be paired up with Elizabeth.
Yes.
So the two of them are going to get together, have Charlotte, who is then going to be taken back in time.
To Tannis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be raised by Tannis,
yeah.
Or Tannhauser.
Yes.
And raised to someday give birth to her mother.
Yes.
Just let that sink in for a minute.
Yeah, no, I had to fucking rewind it and go back and look again and be like.
So Elizabeth.
Excuse me?
Gives birth to Charlotte, who will grow up to give birth to Elizabeth, to give birth to Charlotte. The show is so messed up and yet so awesome. I love it. So beyond that, we've got Jonas, 2020 Jonas, who is talking to 87 Claudia. I love that we have to refer to them.
By the years. Yeah, yeah.
So he's talking to her in the caves, and he says that his older self closed the passage, but the cycle wasn't broken.
Real quick, we could go, and previously we could say like old Claudia, young Claudia,
yeah. Da, da, da,
but now we actually legit have to say what year person we're talking
exactly.
about.
So he says that she had one factor of the equation that could be changed that could make it successful the next time so that this whole thing could be stopped.
Yeah.
Because he apparently spent a lot of time with old Claudia.
I would, yes, from the sounds of things.
He says, this was an interesting line. It didn't really, like, flesh out later on, but he said, the big and little things don't follow the same rules.
Right.
So there are the big things, like the fact that Elizabeth has to give birth to Charlotte so that Charlotte can give birth to Elizabeth. Those are the big things. But then there are the little things that can be nudged, changed, etc. Bartosz, meanwhile, is giving Regina a picture from old Claudia, said that she wanted to turn back time. He's kind of letting her know because Claudia comes to visit Regina. Like 87 Claudia comes to visit Regina, which was equally messed up.
Yep.
Clausen essentially causes the apocalypse.
He gets a search warrant for the power
nuclear
plant. And the power plant's like a day away from being shut down.
Yep.
And there's a section of the power plant that's all locked up. And he goes, I want to go. And what's in there? He's like, oh, that's radioactive waste where we house it.
We buried an old core.
Yeah. And he's like, okay, well, I want to see it. He goes, no one's been in there for like since like 1996 or, you know, 86, whatever it is. Like, well, I want to go in there. And he's like, well, we really don't want to open it up and let the radiation out.
Right.
And he's basically like, I don't give a shit. So they put on their hazmat suits and go in and dig out some barrels.
And when they dig out the barrels, there's some odd black matter in there.
Yep.
As they're looking at that, and Charlotte comes in at that point, and she's like, don't open it, don't open it, this is too dangerous. And he's like, no, I'm going to open it, I have a warrant. And she's like, no, this is going to destroy the world.
Yes.
And he doesn't care, so they open it, we see this black material. At the same time, Jonas is turning on the machine. He has spent the past 12 months... hold on. Where is it? He spent the past 12 months learning things from old Claudia. Says that he has to start the opening.
Yeah.
Adam and Sigmundus want a new world. He wants to save this one.
Right.
So he turns on the machine. When he does, it causes a reaction in the black material, which causes that big sphere that we saw in the future and back in Adam's time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Adam's firing up his machine. So they're all being fired up at the same time.
Oh, didn't Katarina fire up her machine?
Yes.
Yeah. And all this leads to a portal opening.
Yep.
And I know we're skipping to the end of the episode. We'll go back and get the other stuff that's important as well.
Yeah.
But it opens a big portal where We see 2053 Elizabeth, or 2054 Elizabeth, and 2020 Charlotte looking at each other.
Yes.
And they're just staring longingly.
Because it's mother-daughter, mother-daughter, yes, in both ways.
Yeah.
They're both mother and daughter of each other.
Of each other. And finally, Charlotte signs mom. I mean, Elizabeth signs mom.
Yep.
And Charlotte's like, yo, Elizabeth, I'm doing fake sign language.
Right.
And then they reach out to touch each other. And like we saw for the end of the first season, when you touch each other, and that's how it ends.
Yeah.
They touch each other and whoop. But also earlier, like, you know, I kind of left it out. But like after Noah, Adam reveals, because Noah goes to kill Adam. And when he tries to shoot him, the gun doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And basically Adam says, you can't kill me because I'm not meant to die now.
Right.
And then that's when he explains how Charlotte and Elizabeth, how they're mother and daughter and daughter and mother. And then Noah's sister walks in. And I can't think of her name.
And shoots him.
Yeah. What's her name?
I've got her name written down. Keep going.
Yeah. She walks in, takes the same gun that Noah was just trying to use to kill Adam. And she shoots Noah,
mm-hmm,
and kills him. So he dies.
Yep.
Also in this, before that even, when 2020 Jonah is now with Martha. Yeah. 2020 Jonah is with Martha.
Agnes yeah, is the one that showed
up. Yeah, 2020 Jonah's with Martha. And they're going to go run away together.
But he takes her to the bunker because he says he wants her to stay safe for what is coming.
Well, yeah. Yes, he takes her to the bunker. And then when Elizabeth and her dad show up because the apocalypse is coming, she runs away. And all this is starting. And she gets back to Jonah.
Hannah's house.
And that's that 2020 Jonah's there as well.
Yep.
He's with 87 Claudia with her, but he's also here. So he's in two places at once, which is kind of the first time we've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam shows up and shoots Martha.
He basically says that this is the day that Jonas becomes who he's supposed to be, because right, this is the first day that I finally let go of her, which again leads me to believe that's Bartosz.
Yeah. And he's saying, because there's just some pain you can never get over and never come back from, and that's the driving is to be the death of Martha. So he shoots and kills Martha and then leaves.
Well, he basically says, you can either chase me or you can try to save her.
And he chooses to save her. Now,
she doesn't do a very good job of.
Well, no, because, well, she was shot basically right below her heart. She's dead.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, another Martha shows up and her hair's different. And she pulls out like her own little brass or copper, whatever you want to call it, ball. Which is very similar to the time machine mechanism. She's like, we got to get out of here quick before it happens. And he goes, where are you from? Or what time are you from? And she says, do you have it?
Yeah. She says, the question isn't what time I'm from, but what world? Yeah.
Yeah.
So now they're creating alternate realities. Another thing that we had in here, the older Jonas was visited by young Noah.
Yeah.
He was given a letter from him that says that it's from Martha.
Yeah.
You need to save her, Magnus, Francesca, and eventually me and Agnes.
Yeah.
The circuit must be completed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's some complicated stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot of complicated stuff, but I enjoy
Claudia
it.
87 took Regina to the bunker as well.
Yes.
You know, they're getting their little group of people into the bunker to be safe during this apocalypse, because it's the only place that'll be safe, apparently.
Right.
I mean, wow.
But you would think the bunker would lock from the inside, but apparently locks from the outside.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's fine.
Yeah.
You think it would lock from both, I guess.
Yeah, I would think so. Sure.
But yeah, it's
amazing. It's
a great show. It really is a great show.
So where do we go from there?
Well, you know, I feel like we should stay German.
Okay.
And talk about the new show that we watched.
Biohackers.
On Netflix.
Yep.
Another German show.
Yep. Now, this one, I tried from the jump to put it into the English dubbing.
Yeah.
So that I could watch it while I was walking.
Yeah.
This one starts off decidedly differently than Dark.
Yeah, well, this is definitely not as dark as Dark is, because Dark is really fucking dark.
Well, it does start out that way, though, because we get a train ride where people start dropping. Like, this one woman is having, like, a heart attack. And this girl is a med student, and they're like, hey, can you help her? So she starts giving chest compressions, and then this other woman collapses. And then her daughter collapses.
And the little kid, yeah.
And then pretty soon, all these people are collapsing, and then we get the 2 weeks earlier, and you're like, son of a bitch.
Yeah. And then we meet her for the first time. What's her name?
I don't remember.
Neither do I.
I didn't write down any notes because I was walking when I did this.
Oh, okay.
She has a necklace that says Mia.
Mia, yeah. But at the end, I think she says her name is Emma.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we meet Mia for the first time, and she is a college student. And basically, to sum it up, because where this show just got launched last week, I really don't want to ruin it.
Right.
I'm going to give it a hard sell, though.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed the first episode. It was great storytelling. It was fast-paced. The biohacker things comes. All these kids, they're, you know, early 20s, late teens, basically. You know, college age, mm-hmm. or even maybe graduate school age.
Yep.
They're all very smart. And you see things like glow-in-the-dark plants, a glow-in-the-dark mouse.
One of the kids has embedded an NFC chip in his hand so that he can just swipe his card that way.
Yeah, when he pays for gas, he can just put his hand on the pump, etc. It's really cool technology-wise there. But there's definitely a bigger backstory with our main character, Mia, and this biology class that she wanted to get into, this person teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do, I'm guessing, with the death of her twin.
Yeah, because we see some flashbacks to a birthday party. She's got this little toy that she's holding in her hand, and you see a flashback to a birthday party where she got the toy. And there's definitely something there, like a lost...
Her twin brother.
Yeah.
And the name of the doctor, it's like Lorenz, the professor.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see younger her at the hospital and her parents are worried about her brother, you hear them paging Dr. Lorenz to the ER, Dr. Lorenz to the ER. So something she did or didn't do, I'm guessing Mia's blaming on this doctor. But of course, at the end, and I'm not ruining it by saying this, they go back to the train
mm-hmm.
and there's people in like hazmat suits on there. And Mia
sees everybody's out.
And Mia kind of wakes up and, you know, and the person talking to her is like, are you okay? What's your name? Sees the necklace. Goes, is your name Mia? And she's like, no, it's Emma. And she looks confused as to who Mia is. And she has a head wound.
Yep.
Which, so.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I actually really wanted to watch the next episode, like, straight away.
I watched so much this week. I was happy to be able to say, okay, I'm done with that. I watched, yeah. There was a lot of stuff this week.
Yeah, there was.
But that's okay, because it was good stuff.
Right, exactly. It wasn't like it was terrible.
So, while we're on the dark subject
here,
let's go with Hannibal.
All right, fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what was interesting was the last episode that we talked about with the cave bear guy.
Yeah.
Like, we never saw him get killed.
No, we didn't see him get killed.
But we saw the aftermath where Will was talking to him and said, you know, you sent somebody to kill me, I sent someone to kill you, we're even.
Yeah.
Now, in the beginning of episode 10... we see all the fallout of that and everything that was going on. These two episodes were very twisted because we finally got to meet Margot's brother.
Yes.
The one that she tried to kill. And this guy is a fucking psycho.
This guy pissed me off a lot, but he is definitely a sociopath or a psychopath.
And oh,
he
yeah.
He kept saying, Papa, when he was talking about his dad. Oh, Papa, you know, left me the company. And only, it's one of those, like, arrogant prick parents... patriarch, whatever, where only the male heir matters and, you know, the female heir doesn't matter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's a meat business. You know, they're all about meat. And he's bragging. When we first meet him, he's bragging about how he's teaching the pigs to eat people.
Yep. So he can feed people to the pigs.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's showing how he's got, like, one of Margot's old suits and he stuffed it with meat and he's spraying scent on it. And then...
oh, it's Margot's perfume.
Yes. And then he's throwing it down there and then playing a recording of a woman screaming loudly.
It sounds like Margot screaming, by the way.
So that they'll be, you know, conditioned to be okay with hearing screaming while they're eating.
This guy likes to collect people's tears with little gauze pads.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, he purposely, like, there's like a school touring the plant or something. And he purposely isolates one of the kids and talks really nasty and shitty to him to make him cry.
Yeah, because the kid's a foster kid. And so he's like, yeah.
Collect his tears.
Yeah, she hates you and you're never going to get adopted and you're never going to be able to go back there and your kitty hates you. And yeah, he collects the kid's tear and he does the same thing to Margot later when he's got her strapped down. but both of these episodes, there were a lot of machinations going on. So Will seems to be falling under Hannibal's tutelage. You know, he says that he killed the cave bear guy with his bare hands. It was very intimate.
Right.
He seems okay with it. He was not bothered by it. His heart rate wasn't racing. And, you know, Hannibal's like, well, that's definitely the sign of altered mental state. And he's kind of happy about it. He cleans his knuckles off for him and tells him to embrace it. You know, don't retreat inside. Embrace it.
Yeah.
Did you fantasize about killing him? Will says that, you know, I've never felt so alive. Well, then you owe him a debt. How will you repay him? You know, it's getting very intimate. Hannibal's trying to convince Margo to kill her brother. She comes up with the idea instead to go fuck Will and get pregnant.
Yeah, that was her whole plan, because if she can make a new male heir and then her brother dies, then her son will inherit the company.
Yep.
Because if he dies before another male heir comes up, like, she doesn't get anything.
Right. So she's trying to cement her future. So then the brother meets Hannibal because he's like, well, you've been helping Margo, so I want to meet you. And Hannibal agrees to therapize him as well.
Yeah.
And essentially tells him what Margo's doing so that he decides to give her a full-on hysterectomy.
Yeah.
He crashes a vehicle into her and then takes her and says, you will never have a child and I'll make sure. And
he says it way more creepier than
Yeah.
Like, I don't have the exact verbiage, but it is grade A psychopath level verbiage of how he's going to make his sister infertile. And she doesn't even know.
And he's going to tell her that the doctors, you know, they'll look in and they'll think that it was from an accident. And
Yeah.
He's creepy as fuck. Yeah. Meanwhile, Will gives Bloom a gun and tells her, you know, you're going to need to protect yourself because Hannibal's creepy. And she's like, no, you're the creepy one. And, but then Hannibal smells the gunpowder on her later on.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, I've been trying to protect myself and, you know, be ready to protect myself. So he kind of knows something's going on, but, Will talks to Freddie Lowndes and allegedly kills her.
Well, that's the belief we get, that he kills her. And
I didn't believe it for a second.
And brings meat to him. But they make it believable because she's running away from him. He breaks her side window. There's a struggle.
She's screaming into the phone. She tried to call Jack.
Yes.
And she's screaming into the phone. And Jack's like, this is the last message she left me, Will. And he's like, huh.
Well, she was coming to meet with me. And she's got a lot of enemies, and et cetera, et cetera. And
then there's a body. Well, like you said, he brings some meat to Hannibal. And Hannibal asks him, you know, where he got the meat from. And basically they're playing cat and mouse.
Yeah.
It's like it was from a very evil pig or something like that.
Well, he says it's a pig. And he's like, well, yeah, he just says it's pork.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, just to let you know, this animal was definitely killed under stress. So how can you tell? Because the meat's acidic. Like, they go, like, again, like you said, this cat and mouse back and forth. And then finally, like, Will's like, well, it's long pig.
Yeah.
You know, da-da-da-da. But, you know, it's cooked to perfection or some shit. And then in the beginning of the next episode, episode 11, we see the alleged burning body of Lowndes being shoved in a wheelchair in her, what's it called, Tattletale is the name of the newspaper or whatever website she works
for. Lands in her parking spot.
Yeah.
Now, when Freddie had come to Will's place in the barn, she was going through a freezer that was locked, and she found a jaw, a lower jaw. And he was like, it's not what it looks like. I knew exactly what it was looking like, because then the first thing that they did with the scorched body was they identified the dental records and says, yeah, it's her. Okay, so it's definitely her. Well, yeah, because he had the fake jaw there, because this was all part of his plan.
Right.
Was to make people think that he had killed Freddie Lowndes and make Hannibal think that
he had killed Freddie Lowndes.
Yep. So basically, they're all looking for Freddie Lowndes' killer, except they're not really, because Jack was in on it, too.
Right.
And we see her at the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, who was it that he reveals her to?
Bloom, wasn't
it? Bloom, yeah, because Bloom's like, oh, I know Graham did this, because, you know, she's convinced Graham killed Freddie Lowndes, and so that's when, Crawford takes her in the back room, and surprise, surprise.
Yep.
So we have two episodes left.
Of this season.
Yeah, this season. Oh, so also, let's not forget, Graham finds out what... I can think it's Catherine Isabella. I can't think of her.
Margot's brother.
Margot's brother did to her.
Yep.
And he shows up at the farm with Mason and attacks him. And he's like, oh, you must have been the dad. It's like he found out after the fact that she was pregnant. And he's like, and he punches him in the face. And he's like, I'm going to feed you to my pigs. And then Will pulls the gun on him.
Yeah, very easily overpowers him and then dangles him over the pigs.
Yes, and he basically says, like, hey, Hannibal Lecter is the one that is playing us all.
Yeah, whose idea do you think it was for her to get pregnant? Whose idea was it for you to kill her?
Was it for me to come kill you?
Yeah.
It's Hannibal Lecter.
We all have a common enemy. It's Hannibal.
But I think there's a... So I'll be interested to see what happens.
Yep.
Because essentially Will is trying to kill Hannibal again. That's what we're being led to believe. And that's a violation of their truce.
Yep.
It is kind of weird, though, when the FBI goes to a crime scene and they have three people there at times with Bloom, Graham, and Hannibal that are not in the FBI that are consultants.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of consulting bill are they paying out for these crimes?
And how can I get in on that?
And how do they not have enough qualified agents
right?
for this? One makes sense, but whatever. It's a good show.
So yeah.
Two more episodes this season.
Yep.
And then we move on to the next season.
So next, do you want to go with Teenage Bounty Hunters or Warrior Nun? I did not watch Curse this week. I may not go back.
Let's just talk Muppets real quick.
Okay.
Let's bring it up a little bit.
It's 6:45 now, so they'll be opening the gate in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Be prepared, people.
So Muppets. I enjoyed Muppets.
So you've got two episodes to talk about.
Well, you basically talked about the previous episode, and I'll just agree with you. I loved it. I loved Waldo from Statler. I thought they were fantastic.
We had the Okie Dokie cooking with the...
Yeah.
I'm a little annoyed with the Okie Dokie cooking with the turkeys gobbling. You know, she's always...
Right, but she's a turkey.
That's yeah, Statler do. And Waldorf are awesome.
Oh, they are completely awesome.
The pizza velocity challenge from Bunsen and Beaker.
I thought that was... I love how the pizza... They bring out the old... No, that was in the second one. The pizza delivery guy's like, well, have you tried this? Is this what you guys are going to be doing?
Yeah.
No. I didn't recognize him as being a celebrity or anything.
No. We had Miss Piggy dining in the dark, which was hilarious.
That was absolutely hilarious.
And Pepe's unbelievable game show.
I love how they keep getting Taye Diggs for everything.
I know. He's great.
And Linda Cardellini.
Yep.
As always a guest. I did enjoy the second episode or fourth episode, whatever it was, the one that was just on last night, Friday night, where we got the Okie Dokie cooking with the Italian guy making...
Yes.
And then
spaghetti carbonara.
Yeah, and the Swedish chef who's just...
I love... How fresh of an egg do you need? Oh, the fresher the better. And so he's like shaking the chicken.
No, he's like reaching up a chicken's butt and pulling the eggs out. And he's like, well, you really want a nice orange chicken. Oh, okay. And he reaches up and pulls out an orange chicken and like,
go on, chicky, chicky.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's.
It's amazing. Because the other chef that they bring on always does a legitimate job.
Yes. And it's a good celebrity or an actual chef or whatever it is. And they make a delicious meal. And then the chef makes the Swedish chef version of it, which is horrific.
We got to have Mupp close and personal with Aubrey Plaza.
I thought that was good.
It was so good.
We had, what's the bad guy there? The one that Miss Piggy's...
Oh, Deadly.
Deadly. So Miss Piggy is like interviewing her. And then I'll be right back. And she leaves and Deadly comes, sits down with a blonde wig. And it's just like, I want to get reaction shots from you.
Yeah.
And then Miss Piggy comes back and then she leaves again, but puts on a new outfit and comes back and starts the interview over. And it's just completely unprofessional.
And she keeps asking the stupidest question, which is, what is the most personal story that your publicist has ever written about you?
Written for you to talk about. Yeah.
Yes.
And then Deadly comes over with an Aubrey Plaza wig. I was like, you're all set. We don't need you anymore. Yeah. And she's like, no. It's not that you don't need me. I don't need you. And she storms off.
And then we ended with, we had
Bunsen and Beaker
with
the Beepalizer. And they bring out the old computer. It was like, will you please clean the mouse out of my hard drive? And
I don't like being in the room with the spiders.
Yeah. And basically the computer's sad because it's been in storage for 20 years, but they want to use the computer to, register sound levels.
Yep.
And then after every test, they're like, all right, we can go put you away now. And then the computer comes up with another thing they can test or another example they can give for things.
Until he finally does the one where you hit an octave so high that it shatters glass.
And it shatters his own monitor.
And Bunsen's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And he goes, well, thank you. He goes, yes, because now we're going to have to throw you away.
Yeah. So the Muppets are great.
And then we had Lifestyle.
Yeah, Lifestyle.
Yep. And what was who's that pig? Is it like Miss Poogie or something?
Yes, Miss Poogie.
That was great.
Yeah.
But Linda Cardellini was back on there. Taye Diggs as well.
Yeah, Taye Diggs. They were doing something like, I can't, it was like with a spoon to their cheek or something? I can't remember now. It was like some ultra crunchy type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Transformers?
Transformers.
I'm still really digging the story.
Oh my god, I am too.
The more it goes on, you know, and you have like Impactor who is helping Ratchet.
Yep.
And now even he's like, well, shit, I'm screwed. The Decepticons are going to be coming after me now because they saw me helping you.
Yep. Magnus is executed in the beginning.
Yeah.
They march him to Tannhauser Gate because he says that's where the Autobots are hiding.
Yep.
They open it up. It's empty. He's like, I'd never betray them. So they execute him.
Yeah. Megatron does.
Yeah.
Jetfire is proven to be an enemy. He flies away.
Yep.
He's chased down by Starscream and the other auto flyers, whatever they call them.
Seekers.
Seekers, thank you. But he gets away, finds the Autobots, and is like, I want to switch sides.
Yep.
I'm to join you.
Now, what was very interesting in this...
Oh, yeah.
There were two things.
There's a big part.
One was that Prime goes to see the Guardians.
Yes.
Now, I thought the Guardians were going to be the Dinobots.
Me too.
Because they were talking about old. And these things towered over Prime, but we just got to see their silhouettes.
Yes.
They could still be the Dinobots, but they were very wise. Well, and the Dinobots were always dumb.
Well, he wanted to know if Alpha Trion's power, if it came back to them.
Because when Magnus was executed, we saw some sparkly stuff fly out of him.
And Prime could feel it.
Yep.
But what Prime didn't know is that it found Bumblebee and went into Bumblebee.
Yep.
And so the...
Basically, it's the Alpha Trion believed that no single Cybertronian should have both the Matrix of Leadership and the Alpha Trion protocols at the same time. So they were always split up. Prime has the Matrix of Leadership.
Yep.
And Ultra Magnus had the Alpha Trion protocols.
Yes.
And now they're in Bumblebee. And he's getting some weird flashing memories and such.
Well, but he also knows about Alpha Trion, which he didn't know before.
Right.
And so when he goes to Prime to talk to him about it, you know, once he gets into Prime, Prime kind of helps him so he can kind of go into his own mind and meet Ultra Trion. You know, Alpha Trion, and Alpha Trion basically kind of explains to him what's what.
Yep.
They did a lot in 20 minutes.
Now, what's really cool about this series, I don't know if you know this or not, this is a trilogy series.
Yes.
This is the first part called Siege.
Yes.
And we've got two more coming eventually.
Yes. I loved Transformers when I was a kid, and I don't know if I'd appreciate this version of the Transformers being a kid.
Right.
Like I was.
This is a more grown up.
Yeah, it is. But I'm really digging it.
Now, speaking of which, I told you this, but I just wanted to bring it up here. Thundercats is now on Hulu.
Yeah.
The original 87 series and the reboot series, not the chivified bullshit one that's on Cartoon Network.
Right.
But the one that was actually more anime-ish that was a reboot and was a little before its time. It was actually really good. They're both on Hulu now. So if people want to check those out, definitely do so.
Okay. Warrior Nun, I guess?
Warrior Nun.
What happened on Warrior Nun?
Warrior Nun, she actually Ava goes to visit the science lady.
Yeah.
Because she's like, look, you know, these nuns all want to talk religion to me.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me why this thing glows, makes your things glow blue and what's going on. So the woman's like, yeah. And contrary to what we figured.
Yeah.
She basically runs her through a gamut of tests, tries to use the halo to power her portal.
Yeah.
And then when it fails, she's like, sorry, you can go now. Like, she doesn't try to rip it out of her or anything like the nuns did.
Right.
She basically shows her son. She says, you know, I was told I could never have a kid.
Well, no, but before that, Ava finds out that, hey, this isn't running. Like, she finds the hose they stuck in her back.
Yeah.
The electronics. It wasn't running to where they were. It was running through the floor to another room. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what's down in this room? Why were you trying to, you know, and then she phases through the floor. That's when she meets her son.
Yep.
And that's when she explains.
He basically has a weird blood disorder. Yeah. She was never supposed to have a kid. So she's trying to open a portal to another world where there's no disease. His blood disorder won't be a problem. He can live happily. And
so we find out why she's doing what she's doing. She's trying to do it for her kid to save her son's life. And she's going to go there with him.
Yep.
So she's not doing it for evil, nefarious way.
Allegedly.
Well, allegedly. Not doing it for evil, nefarious reasons. However, she is being evil and nefarious to accomplish what she wants.
Meanwhile, back on the nun side of things, the Vatican side.
The cardinals rolled up.
Yeah, the cardinals rolled up, and basically they're all getting shipped off to, you know, East Bumfuck.
He's brought in a set of recruits that were all rejected previously, that had been there and rejected or washed out or whatever it was. And they're there to send everybody away And if Shotgun Mary, or I can't think of her name, but the Asian one that's a really good fighter.
Yep.
If she shows back up, or, you know, there to be, you know, this new British or Irish nun is to kill them based on what the Cardinal said.
Yep.
And also, if Ava shows up, they're to kill her and take the halo out of her.
Yep. Yeah, they're not messing around.
Yeah. And when Mother Superior there tries to go speak to the Pope about it, we find out at the end of the episode, they reveal the Pope's died. And yep. The Cardinal's the one that greets her. His Holiness has just passed away. It's like, fuck.
Yeah. And we also, at the end of this episode, see Mary stumping along, bloodied, battered, bruised, beaten, but not in hell.
Nope. And, well, not Mary, but the other one.
Yeah.
The one that had the spikes or whatever.
Yeah, the one that got dragged to hell.
But when Ava goes back, Mary's there because they're trying to infiltrate the area. So Mary shows. But they get Mary, they get Ava, the Asian nun's there, and then the other young nun that was supposed to be the one to keep track of the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
When all the other nuns surround them to, like, basically kill them and stop them, she starts shooting and they all flee and they all...
Yeah, she fires up in the air and they're like, oh, we better get out of here.
Well, I don't think any of them had guns.
Yeah.
So they all flee. Part of me enjoyed the episode.
Because it was different.
But another part of me is like, the nuns are going to fight with each other now.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the way of religion, though?
Yeah, no.
You know, it really, really is.
I really dug the hell out of Teenage Bounty Hunters.
This episode was a good one.
And our new buddy Daniel said he was going to check out Teenage Bounty Hunters because of our recommendation. So I hope he enjoyed it.
I hope so, too.
I really, really, really dug Teenage Bounty Hunters this week.
Basically, they're falling into it. They get to meet their boss's handler. You know, the one who gives him the bail assignments.
Well, she's the bail bondsman.
Yes.
And we find out that he used to date her, but then decided instead to marry her sister, and then that didn't work out.
Sounds like she was a stripper and he was a bouncer.
Yes. But she's a bail bondsman, so when she has skips, she gives him the work. So, yes, he does kind of work for her and reports to her, but, yeah, they meet her. And they go through this long, elaborate story as to who the girls are.
Yep.
And from what I can figure out, the bail bondsman just doesn't give a shit.
She doesn't care.
Comes back. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they get a job, and it's to go track down this, what's his name? Kevin Chu?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think Kevin Chu is from Supernatural, but regardless.
Or Kevin Tran or something like
that. No, that's Kevin Tran. So yeah, Kevin Chu, they track down this guy who skipped out on bail, and he's a good one. They're going to make enough money off of him, the girls are, with their cut, to pay back their parents.
Yep.
And the long and the short of it is, like, you know, they go to his, they try to figure out who he is. He has no social media they can find. They find out he has, his grandmother lives at this retirement home, so they go there to see him, and he's not there. She doesn't know where he is, but she says, like, a nickname of his.
Yeah.
So one of the twins, finds Tookie Chu on social media. And they track down his girlfriend, and they go to have a stakeout. And, the boss is like, look, we need to be patient. We're not going to go in there. We're not going to approach him.
And he has all these rules, like, you do not drink anything for, like, 24 hours before a stakeout.
Because he has bladder issues.
Yep.
Well, he has to go use the bathroom, and the young girl there, can't remember their names. It's so shitty of me.
Anyway.
But anyways, the less religious twin, because they're both religious, decides that she's going to go in there because she just wants to go kick down doors and be like this bounty hunter on YouTube that their boss hates, and he's a joke and a piece of shit or whatever.
Yep.
So she goes in and very poorly tries to get information on where her boyfriend is.
A waxing place.
Yeah.
And she goes in, she goes, I need a waxing. The girl's like, for your upper lip. And she's like, no, my, and then she like touched her upper lip and she's eyebrows. Like, my brows.
Yeah.
And the girl's like, really? And then you see her waxing the upper lip.
Yeah. But she gets away.
Yep.
Because the twin doesn't know what she's doing, basically. And so she overplays her hand. She runs off. Boss, of course, is pissed at them.
Yep.
In the interim, the other side story is The evil girl, the one that wants the other twin's job at the at the nunnery or at the school, is going to blackmail her with the condom, saying she's going to tell everyone that her and her boyfriend had sex, and yeah.
So basically, they realize we're teenagers in high school. All we have to do is start a rumor, and it's going to get so twisted. It's like the game of telephone. You know, it's going to get so twisted out of proportion that even if she comes up with a condom wrapper, nobody's going to believe it. Everybody's going to have a different story. And sure enough, it works. So they're basically in the clear because nobody is ever going to believe that these two had sex until the evil chick goes to her boyfriend and says, "You sinned in God's eyes," and blah, blah, blah. And as she says later on, she's like, "I picked the weakest link.
Yeah.
You know, I looked for the weak spot. I exploited him, and so you're going to quit, or
you're gonna resign as this person, the head of this thing group
organization.
Or I'm gonna tell everyone about it." And April, by the way, is the shitbag. Okay. And so Luke is scared, and as I guess he kind of should be, and Blair. Oh, sorry, Sterling. That's the good twin, if you will. Sterling and Blair, because they go to church, and the preacher at church is like, everyone should have sex every day because it feels good.
Yeah.
That's basically his message.
Yeah, he tells all the parents to go home, and if you're married, have sex every night this week.
And so mom and dad basically try to have sex every night, and dad's back's bothering him, and they need a new heating pad.
It's not bothering him.
Well,
it was an excuse to get them out of the house.
Well, that new heating pad, it's 20 years. You know, we've had it for 20 years, but hey.
So you need to run to the store and get us one now. And they're like, well, you don't want it. She goes, perhaps I asked that wrong. Go now.
Yeah, I've used those exact words. Perhaps I said this wrong. It was not a question.
Yeah.
So they go to the store, and while they're there, they see the minister. And I love the conversation between the sisters. Like, oh, do you see that? Someone's buying cigarettes. Yeah. Should we tell them how bad they are? I don't know. It's none of our business. Let's just tell them anyways. Excuse me, sir, but you know those are sticks of death.
Yeah.
And it's the minister. And it's he looks kind of bummed out. He's wearing a t-shirt with a sweater over it, and he's buying his carton of Marlboros. And he's like, basically, he says, like, you know what? You're right. They're not great. They're not for everybody. But they're for me.
And this is between me and God.
Yeah, this is between me and the big guy, and I'm okay with that.
Yep. And if I ask him for forgiveness, he'll forgive me. So, yeah.
And basically, and then when Sterling tries to pay for the new heating pad with money that she got changed back from the nursing home, they're counterfeit bills. So they discover he must be there because these are counterfeits, and he's cycling through the nursing home.
Yep.
At the same time, so they go to the nursing home. Their boss meets them there. Blair gets to kick in some doors. They find Kevin. There's a big chase. They run him down, and they arrest him, and they get their money.
Yep.
On the other side of the fence, too, they realize, wait a second, we gave the minister a pass because we look at him as on a higher level, and we just dismissed what he was doing as okay. So they decided to have Sterling do the same thing in the group, and she basically tells everyone, yeah, it's my condom. No one believes her.
Right.
And then April produces the condom, and then they all think it's April's, and there's something wrong with you, April. So Sterling comes again and is like, no, it's mine, and kind of rescues April from the embarrassment. But at the same time, it costs her.
Right.
And so she goes and tells the head of the thing that she needs to step down.
Yep.
And that's pretty much where it ends.
Yeah, that's exactly where we left off for there. Hold on. We're going to go pay for our tickets. So, yeah, all in all, a good show.
Yeah.
See, like I said, you know, that was like a minute out of our life to come on, park in the right spot and get ready for the movie. But you guys didn't even notice. You just
heard a little. I like to park so that I'm kind of angled at the screen and not straight on the screen.
Right.
I don't know why. It's just what I like. And I'm not a front row parker at any movie theater ever.
No. No. Well, at a movie theater, hell no.
No, but even at a drive-in. Typically at the Pride's Corner, I'm usually in the third row maybe, but second row seemed good here.
Yeah.
I haven't been to, this is a Skowhegan drive-in. I haven't been to this one since 2013 or 14 probably. You just were here earlier this year.
I was, but I parked about three rows back from here.
Yeah. Anyhow. Yeah.
Anywho. So yeah, now we've got about an hour. Let's see, it's 7:04. The movie starts at 8:20. So we got about an hour and 20 minutes to kill. It will not take us that long to finish this recording, though, because we just finished up Teenage Bounty Hunter.
You want to talk about bit players?
No, let's save that for a little bit here.
Okay. What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk. Did you watch High Score?
Oh, I did. And I fucking loved it.
The first episode only, right?
Yes. I only watched the first. We do one a week.
Yep.
We don't binge anything anymore. Well, we binge old stuff. Like I binge the shit out of Tacoma FD.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up, but I've done season one. I'm on season two already.
It's a great show.
It's fun. It's really, well, I'm also reading Mustache Shenanigans, mm-hmm. Which I've learned so much about them doing Puddle Cruiser and, Super Troopers, of course. And yep. then I just got through the Dukes of Hazzard and everything. So yeah.
Nice.
But anyhow, yes, I watched High Score and I absolutely fucking loved it.
Yes. I loved it too. This was the early days of video gaming. And I'll tell you, I even learned some stuff on this.
Yeah.
Like I know a lot about video game. We talked about last week, how that's kind of my jam. And I even learned some good stuff in this. I loved the story of the kits. You know,
yes.
Basically, video games were predictable.
Yes. Once they figured out the patterns, Missile Command was the first one.
Yep.
And they made a kit, made it called Super Missile Command.
Yep.
And you essentially attach it to the original motherboard.
Yep.
And it makes it different. It makes it kind of more difficult, different levels, different everything.
Yep. This moves a little faster, and there's new aliens to shoot, and yeah.
And then they got sued.
Yeah, they got sued by Atari. And I love how the guys that they're interviewing, they're like, oh my God, we got sued by Atari. This is so awesome.
Yeah.
Like, this is a big thing.
Like, the largest video game company in the world at the time is suing us.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, they were excited. They were like, we're doing something right. I think these guys need to go up there and clean their screen a little bit. Looks like there's a little
stain. You know, here's the thing. You won't even see it when the movie's on.
I know.
Except
but I see it now.
Except if it goes white, white, white.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, High Score is a great documentary and every week is a different thing. I'm really looking forward to week three because it's all about RPGs.
So realistically, I mean, I don't know if we're going to give away a ton or what. Well,
it's a documentary.
Have you ever heard of, what was it? F5?
No.
That video game system?
Okay. And see, that was a learning thing for me too.
If you're in video games, you should go watch this because like, it's hilarious how Ms. Pac-Man came to be.
Yeah.
It was literally like those guys that made the kits. They made the kit to make it from Pac-Man to Miss Pac-Man.
Yep.
Except, I don't know. So Atari settled with them because Atari decided, wait a second, maybe we don't want to sue them because if we do, or if they figure out a way, or they can release a way to change our codings of how we do things, then we can't ever sue people. Because they basically went in and deleted all of Atari's from their kit that they made, deleted all of the everything that Atari was suing them over.
Yeah.
They deleted all of it, but they still had the game now.
Yep.
And Atari's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't want people to know that's all they have to do.
Yeah. So everybody could basically make games.
Yeah. So they basically said, we want you to come work for us.
Yep.
And if you do make another kit of one of our games, we need your permission. So when it came time for Pac-Man, they were already working on the Pac-Man kit to make Miss Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So they contacted the company that made Pac-Man and basically said, hey, we made this kit. We need your permission to use it. We want to do this. And as far as that company knew, Atari sued them and lost.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, you can have permission. And that's how Miss Pac-Man came to be.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about.
And then when they started talking about the home consoles,
yeah.
I did know a lot of that, and I did remember that. Basically, back when video games started to boom with the Atari system and such,
it was
like Silicon Valley.
Yes.
I mean, literally, it was the beginning of Silicon Valley. But it was the Wild West. You know, people could get jobs at Atari, and there were wild parties and hot tub sex and weed in the halls. And you could
wear whatever you want, dress however you wanted.
They just wanted... They wanted anybody who was going to be competition for them to come work for them. They were just scarfing up competition like crazy.
And you could work any hours you wanted.
Yep.
You could roll in at noon, work till midnight, roll in at 5 in the morning, work till 5 at night, whatever you wanted to do, as long as your work was done.
And then they started churning out, because of the lawsuits and because of that, people started realizing that they could write games.
Yes.
And so more and more people started churning out these craptastic games.
Right.
And before you knew it, there was a glut of them on the market. Things like they pointed out E.T.
for the Atari 2600. Well, they talked to the guy that created E.T.
Yeah. And I love how jovial he was at the end. He's like, you know, I met Steven Spielberg. This was huge.
Yeah.
And he was like, what if we made it like a race? And I'm like, it's not. No. Or he wanted to make it like Pac-Man.
Yeah, he's like, why can't you make it like Pac-Man? Because this isn't Pac-Man.
Yeah, this is your movie. This is E.T.
But this is the reason why the E.T. game sucks so bad. Because the same guy that made E.T., really, the same guy that made... There's a baby here.
The same guy that made E.T.
He didn't drive, don't worry.
No, no. But that made E.T., like a little baby shaking a rattle with a pacifier in its mouth, little baby. Whatever.
Yeah.
Not my kid. But the same guy that made E.T. also did Raiders of the Lost Ark, which mm-hmm. he took 9 months to make. They gave him 5 weeks to make E.T.
Yeah.
They gave him like 3 days to come up with a plan to go pitch to Spielberg.
Yeah.
And that's why E.T. sucked when it came out.
Yeah, it was garbage. But, and he's laughing about it now. He's like, I made the most reviled game in video game history.
There's so many Atari 2600 games that came out because they just started churning them out, and they sucked.
Yeah. Like the Pac-Man was garbage. Awful.
It is. The Atari 2600 Pac-Man is terrible. Now, the Atari 2600, like Space Invaders, is decent.
Yep.
That was cool learning about the first ever, like,
arcade.
Space Invaders championship.
Yes.
Where they actually played it on the Atari.
Yeah.
And
how in Japan they had Space Invader cafes.
Yes.
Like that was it.
Yeah, the Invader cafes or whatever they called
them. Because the original premise for the game was shooting people, and they're like, yes. Well, you can't just shoot people.
Yeah.
We can't do that. Well, what are we going
to
do?
Well, it was like, let's shoot. It was really cool watching them come down to, it's all like, well, octopus, I thought War of the Worlds was octopuses, so let's have octopuses.
Yeah.
And crabs. And it was amazing how they came up with it.
Yep.
Some games, like Asteroids and Space Invaders, they translated well over to the Atari 2600.
Yes.
Many games did not.
Right.
And that's another thing. But then they talk about the first ever cartridge game system, which I never heard of this. It was called, like, the F5. And it was an African-American fellow who created it. And they talked to his kids and one of his grandsons, because he passed away.
Yep.
And they still have a nice working one, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, I've never heard of that.
I had
never.
Nope.
And you've heard of, you still have every game system you've had, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd heard of like ColecoVision. I've heard of so many of these other old, but I've never heard of this one.
And nope.
It makes me wonder why. Like, I want to look into it more. But
yes.
I absolutely loved this TV show.
Yep. And I cannot wait to watch more of it.
Yeah.
So along the video game line, we started a new show this week. I'm sorry if you hear music in the background. Apparently they're playing 80s horror music really loud to set the mood for us.
It's probably on the station that plays the movie, but anyways.
Yeah, so we're not going to do that. But if you hear in the background, just consider it a bonus. So we watched
Dead Pixels.
Dead Pixels.
Now, this is a show that was on in the UK. I think it was on ITV4. Couple years. It came out in 2019. There's 6 episodes. It did get renewed for a second season. It just hasn't come out yet.
Yep. Well, we saw it on the CW because the CW picked it up because they're basically like, we need something to fill our lineups.
Well, remember the that adventure show we watched that was on the summer one time?
Yes.
I can't remember the name of
it. I can't either, but I remember what you're talking
about.
It's
one of those things. And here's what's funny. It's not on the CW app. It's on the CW Seed app.
Yeah.
I had to download that to watch it.
Yep.
But I'll say,
it's a half-hour show.
Yeah, you had said I may not care for it because it's more up your alley, because I do not play those games.
Because it's about video games.
Yeah. I love old video games. I don't play new games, really. I gotta say, I loved it based on the characters alone in the show. But I hated the fact that half the dialogue was bleeped out because it's a British show, so they say whatever they want. Fuck, pussy, whatever.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that there were a few C-bombs dropped in there.
Oh, absolutely.
And, there was a lot of bleeping. Like, to the point where it was almost comical at times. They'd be like, yeah, I'm going to beep, 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 beep. And you know that on the original British broadcast, it was all right there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the basic premise is that there are these three friends. One of them is I'd say she's like in her early 20s, mid 20s girl.
Yeah.
She's got her best friend who's about the same age. And then there's this guy who's a dad, not a single dad, because his wife is in the picture. We just never see her.
I think he lives in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, he might. He sounded like it.
He has two kids, and his wife was out of town in the first episode.
Yeah. And his kids are always off screen.
Yeah. And his daughter, his youngest daughter, who's like less than a year old. He talks about, I put a lid on her crib, on her playpen. What? Yeah, I put something. She likes to climb out of it, so I just put a piece of plywood on the top of it, so she can't climb out. So she's literally in a cage then. She's in a box, in a cage, and they're kind of making fun of how shitty of a daddy is.
Yep. But they all play together in an online game, and this is the typical horrible-looking, you know, no game looks like this. It's all CGI rendering. It's not a game, but it's used as a conveyance method to tell the story. And so they play this online game together, and they, it opens with her being on a date her roommate set her up on a date, but she gets a call from her buddy who says, you know, those Korean kids are taking our castle again. And, you know, they get ransacked and they lose all the stuff in the game. It's a decent show.
I liked it a lot. You should go watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. You should check this out. It's a fun little half hour show. So 20 minutes if you watch it on the app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we just have Umbrella Academy now?
Well, we've got Umbrella Academy and Bit Players. I will say this. I watched the next episode of Unwell on Netflix. That documentary. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
This one was about tantric sex. And it was good because, once again, they just present different stories.
Yeah.
You know, so you had one that was the woman who's a sex therapist and she does Zoom calls and stuff like that and talking about tantra and orgasms and stuff like that. And then on the flip end of the spectrum, they have one that was a tantric sex cult and the cult leader who was sexually abusing his victims. And none of them realized it until they actually started coming forward and realizing it. I will also say this, Mike.
Yes.
I watched the second episode of Room 104.
How's that treating you?
This one was called The Pizza Boy.
Oh, nice.
I'm not even going to tell you about this episode because this was great. And legitimately, like I told you about the first one with Ralphie, and I went into detail, and you said you liked it. You got to watch this show because it's a half an hour show, and they've got Twilight Zone type twists in it.
What's that? What channel is that on again?
HBO Max.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Channel I don't possess.
Yeah. Well, for $15 a month, you could.
We went on a huge rift after we stopped recording last week.
Oh, we did.
John left the house about where I could get $15 a month from.
Oh, yeah.
To pay for HBO
Max. Oh, I was laying out the math for him. It is not that hard. It's like 50 cents a day. You know, it's like those old Sally Struthers commercials. For less than a cup of coffee a day, you too could have HBO Max and watch these awesome fucking shows. All right. We're going to pause here for a moment because Mike has to go pee. So, yeah, I think all we have left is Bit Players and Umbrella Academy.
Well, Bit Players was a 13-minute episode this week, and it was called
Dads. It's a long one.
And it was called Dads, and it had that old 80s, or not 80s, maybe 90s sitcom feel opening.
Which I love.
With the opening credits and the whole thing, plus it just the way it visually looked. Mm-hmm. You know how, like, a TV show looks?
Yes.
Look and the feel of it.
Almost a grainy, like, 4:3.
Well, or brighter even. Mm-hmm. You know, this, like, it's like the episode of Scrubs where they have James L. Brooks on.
Mm.
And they do, like, the TV version. So, like, the picture changes. You know what I mean? Same thing. It's like you're watching this through a different filter, a different whatever. and it really reminded me of My Two Dads.
Well, okay, you put the wrong emphasis there because it made it sound like you had two fathers.
No.
You were talking the show My Two Dads.
It reminded me of the TV show My Two Dads. As far as,
you were like, My Two Dads?
The way, I don't know, that's the first thing I thought of, and it could be because the title was called Dads, but the outside of the building as the camera panned up, when they go into the apartment, kind of the way the apartment was laid out this time reminded me of it. I will say the island that they're cooking at is fucking huge. Like, it's so tall. But no, basically...
Do you think that they did that just to kind of, like, make a joke of it?
It seemed comical. I mean, it was up to his chest. And I've never seen, like, a kitchen island that tall.
I've never seen anything that tall when it comes to furniture.
Right, yeah. So I've definitely never seen a kitchen island that tall. But it was, like, okay, so Leon... So Ahmed's doing all the cooking, and he's cooking Pakistani food. And he wants... And so they kind of spent, it's Father's Day on the show, so they kind of spend the day smoking pot and reminiscing about their dads.
Because, but, you know, that's what you do on Father's Day.
Right, yeah. But it kind of turns, it's weird because it's like, it's half comedy and then half almost like a very special episode.
Right.
Because we learn about how Ahmed's father really didn't take much interest in what he was doing. And we see this funny bit where it's clearly Ahmed dressed up as his dad being like, "Oh, hi, Ahmed, here's $1, go bother someone else. Ahmed, here's $20, go buy some pornography."
Yep.
"You know, Ahmed, here's $100, go, you know, basically go away." and then you have Nigel's dad, Leon's dad, who is Jamaican and is listening to, there's this old recorder, like reel-to-reel player that his dad listened to hours of music on. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, Leon getting sage advice from his father and how heartwarming it is. And Ahmed getting not so much sage advice from his father and how unheartwarming it is. Like, yeah. That's the very special episode side of it. So it was a really funny episode. There was a lot of great moments in it. There was a lot of great little, not flashbacks, but you know what I mean? I just can't think of the words tonight. I apologize.
That's all right. It's a great show.
Yeah, like moments in their minds, like they're thinking about their dads and reenactments of their dads.
There you go.
God. And it's them playing their dads, which right. is awesome. And we see multiple reenacts with their dads, and some of the moments are amazing, some of the moments are hilarious, some of the moments are downright sad. I don't know. I enjoyed the hell out of it again.
Again, this is not a show as in like a half-hour comedy no. every week where there's a new story. This is more like skits. It yes. is a word or well, vignettes.
But each episode is a good, it's not like it's standalone. Yeah, each episode's self-contained, but at the same time, there's a overarching story of their friendship.
Yes.
Because like in this one, Ahmed's talking about how he's going to become a serious actor and he's going to go out for more roles. And Leon has to sell this recorder of his dad's, this music player of his dad's, because he needs money to pay rent. Because the money he got from the Chunky commercials, which is like a Swanson... It's not like the chunky like soup we have in America.
Right.
It's
more or
like
the chunky chocolate bars.
Right, right. It's more of a Swanson frozen dinner type thing called Chunky. And his dad would be there like directing more than the director would.
Right.
And it was there was very self-deprecating things his dad would make him say as he's trying to sell these frozen meals or point at the chicken more. Like it's so we get those flashbacks as well as little commercial gigs. So he's got to sell this recorder because that his dad loved because he can't afford rent. He needs to sell to make money for rent.
Which is sad.
And you know, at any time, Ahmed, you could chip it and pay some rent. And Ahmed's like, I could, but don't worry. I'm going to go up for every acting role I can get. And then I'll be making the mad actor money. So.
Which doesn't help him at all.
No, but I really enjoy the hell out of the show.
Yes, I do too. I'm glad that they brought it up to us. And
yeah.
I'm glad we've gotten to experience it.
Yeah, so we got four more episodes. Mm-hmm. Becky's, Comic-Con, D&D, and Final Fight.
Have we heard yet? Has anybody said if they have a second season coming?
I have not heard if there's a second season coming, no. I did find out, though, that they both teach in Toronto. They teach improv at Second City.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's really cool. You know, so they're obviously still doing stuff, and they did win an award, like a Webby Award type, for a web series type award mm-hmm. recently, so that's cool. I'd like to see a second season.
I would, too.
I think it'd be fun.
If you guys are listening, which I know you are.
You should make a second season.
Yes, we're pulling for a second season.
That would be great for us. Umbrella Academy. Oh, you know, before we get to Umbrella Academy, sure. actually, Kate and I have been burning through the World's Most Dangerous Race, a.k.a. Eco Challenge Fiji, on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
There's 10 episodes. We've got three left to watch now.
Okay.
It hits Okay, Bear Grylls is the host. And he is, like, the biggest cheerleader in the world for these people, these 60 teams, trying to get them to keep going and tell them how great they're doing. And it's really cool.
Yep.
And he does a great job with that, hosting the whole show. But they do a great job in general just telling us the story of these people, of certain people, and backstories. And they hit you in the emotional heartstrings a shit ton in this show. It's really amazing. We started watching, I thought it'd be cool to watch. I enjoyed watching the old Eco Challenges, you know, 20 years ago when they were on. But this one, it's a lot different. Again, like I said, emotional heartstrings in this. Like, there's this one moment where this guy's talking about his son who died. And, you know, he goes on these races still, and he likes to bring his piece of his son with him. And he pulls out, like, a little vial, and he takes out a couple of his son's ashes and drops them. Because he likes to bring his son with him and, like, you know, and it's just, like, wow. the way he described it was just amazing. And then there's another team that has, it's a father and son and then two other people, and because it's four-man teams, but this father's got Alzheimer's. And he has been a lifelong adventure racing, and his son, like, they're both going to do the race this year on different teams. But his dad got the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, so now he wants to do this race with his dad, and this is going to be, like, his last race. And this guy, first, he's like his 60s, and he is just powering through this thing. It's crazy. But you can see the difficulty they're having when, like, it's been too long of a day and his mind starts going on, whatever. And to all these other racers out there, he's like a legend. So when they run into these other teams, They're like, hey, Mace, you inspired us so much. And it's crazy. So this show is really hitting you in the emotional heartstrings a lot while you're watching it.
Nice.
Yeah. It's just been really, really good. We're both pretty well hooked into it. We'll probably finish it tomorrow.
Nice.
What happened on the Umbrella Academy?
So this was the Majestic 12. And we discover, lo and behold, there's a secret organization called the Majestic 12.
Get out.
And Dad's part of it.
Yeah.
But before we get to the Majestic 12, we actually go back to London 1993. And we get to see a couple of people getting executed and the handler's there. And she finds a little crying girl in a cubby in the wall and takes her as her own and trains her up, and that's Lila.
Yes, and we see the very over-the-top vigorous training that she is putting Lila through.
Yeah, like firing a machine gun at her while she does flips across
an obstacle course. Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, we basically get to see, okay, she was turned into a killing machine. And they're having a back and forth, and Lila's... She's like, so we hate number 5. And she's like, yep, but you want me to protect him. Oh, with your life. You need to protect him at all costs, no matter what.
Yeah.
But why don't we just kill him? No, he has to be protected. So the handler wants him protected for some reason, but she won't tell Lila what it is. Which, of course, then Lila talks about the Swedes.
Yeah.
And the handler seems actually, like, shaken. She's like, well, if they wanted you hurt or if they wanted you dead, you'd be dead. Trust me.
She's like, oh, they're here already? Did you call them in? Well, yeah, but I mean, I didn't think they'd be here so fast.
Yeah.
Do they know about me?
She says they're all triplets, like Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Yeah. And I was really hoping that was their names, because that would have been even cooler. But yeah, so a lot of the kids are starting to get together. You know, Luther's talking to Vanya, and he says, yeah, we've got an apocalypse coming. We caused the apocalypse. It was you. And now we're back here in time, and it's still kind of coming. And Jack Ruby kind of interrupts that, and he's pissed at Luther for throwing the fight and basically kicks him out.
Yes.
He's like, you know, you fucked up just once, but you're out now.
Yeah.
You're gone. Get out of here. I hate you. And so he's going to go find a new place to live. So, you know, by the end of the episode, he's going to live in the radio shop where Five and Diego have been hanging out.
Yeah, he just shows up there and like, yeah, this is me now.
Yep, that's going to be their new base of operations.
Yep.
Let's see. Klaus is still trying to stop Dave from going to Vietnam. And unfortunately, Dave doesn't know him yet.
Right.
And Dave is not comfortable with his sexuality yet. He has
definitely not come out.
And his dad is very, very homophobic to the point where Klaus is like trying to tell him. He's like, just please, you got to listen to me. You got to listen to me. And his dad's like, are you going to take that from this queer? Get up, punch that queer in the face, punch him in the face, get up there and punch that queer in the face. And I'm keeping my voice down because the windows are open and I don't want people to think I'm a homophobe.
I love you.
Yeah.
While this is all being screened.
And so Dave finally caves into his dad, gets up, and just clocks Klaus in the face.
And Klaus is, of course, devastated and hurt.
Yep.
And
so he goes on a bender.
But Ben, though, is just, like, actually feels bad for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, you legitimately are trying to help this person.
Yep.
I'm sorry. However, this is not going to be the answer. And he's like, yes, it is. So he goes on a bender, gets himself a bunch of booze, shows back up at the mansion, and his cult found him.
Yep.
And now he has to run away from them again. Uh-oh. Five doesn't trust Lila at all.
Nope.
He basically knows that she is hiding something. I think he knows that she's a plant.
Yes.
Because he's very wise. It's so easy to forget, you know, because he's a kid. The actor's a kid. It's so easy to forget that this kid is actually 130-something years old.
Right.
He's been around for a long time. But basically, Five, Lila, and Diego all go to this party that's going to have the Majestic 12. That's where their dad's going to be.
Yep.
Because they found the invitation in Dad's office, and they're going to go there and try to get some answers. And while they're there, Diego sees his mom.
Yes.
And he's floored, and he calls her mom, and she's like, nobody's ever called me that, you know.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm looking for Reginald Hargraves. Oh, he's my date tonight. What? He's your date? So, you know, poor Diego's now floored.
Yep.
Five hides in the closet to listen in on them, and then the Swedes show up, and Hargraves, of course, you know, detects that Five is in the closet, goes over there, beats the shit out of the louvered door, but he warped out.
Yeah.
And then we get a nice fight in the hallway between Diego and two of the Swedes and Five and one of the Swedes, which his power doesn't seem to be working around that.
Yeah. And Lila shows up.
Yep. And Diego's like, help me. And he's got two of them on him.
Yeah.
But she sees that Five is getting attacked by one, and she remembers that she has to save him at all costs. So she runs over to save Five.
But she does seem to have some very strong emotional feelings for Diego.
Oh, yes, she does. We get some good fighting in there.
Yeah, she's a great fighter. Yeah.
It was fun to watch her kick ass and watch them kick ass. And Allison and Luther meet up.
Yep.
Who cares?
Well, they Luther's at a barbecue joint.
Yep.
And just ordering food after food after food. And Allison shows up after Ray rejects her. Because Ray hasn't come home. She can't find him anywhere. She's nervous. She's scared out of her life. She goes to work. And there they are having a meeting.
Yeah.
And basically, they accuse her of being a traitor. I should have known you come along and you get in and we get married and, you know, you said something to him to make him go, ain't no white officer going to listen to some black woman, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So, yeah. So she goes and she finds Luther and that's when he's like, you know, yep, we brought it with us. Apparently in 5 days, the world's going to end again. So, sucks to be us.
Klaus ends up going to Allison's house.
Yep.
Because all his cult people that showed up at his place.
Yep.
So he goes to Allison's house to hide out. Meets up with them. And while Luther is at Elliot's place, getting high on nitrous.
Which was just weird.
Yeah, he tells Luther that the apocalypse is coming in 7 days.
Yep. And,
don't forget, Vanya goes back to the Coopers.
And the kid has run away and somehow drowned himself in a lake.
Yeah.
But she uses her powers to lift all of the water out of the lake,
yep.
Runs in, picks him up. Brings him back. All the water drops.
Yeah.
She resuscitates him.
Yep.
And that's it. Her and Mom are now going to get it on.
Well, that's the thing is, she feels she can't leave because Harlan will be too upset. And then, you know, Sissy kisses her.
Yep.
And we hear some brown chicken, brown cow noise going on.
Because Sissy basically tells her, like, you know, make me stop or tell me to stop.
Yeah.
And Vanya's like, nope, I'm going to put my hand up next to your face and keep going.
We're
going to
kiss romantically.
Yeah.
And passionately.
Yep. So, yeah, I think that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
So
I love the show.
Oh, I do too. I can't wait to get to the end of this season, find out what kind of twist they're going to leave us on for the next season.
Oh, yeah. Probably they'll save the day and then cause the apocalypse again.
So, movies.
I watched one movie because it's Saturday night.
I watched one and a half, and we're about to watch two.
Yeah. Maybe we'll record on the drive home to talk about Pieces of Evil Dead.
Sure.
Because I'll tell you, Evil Dead's fucking amazing, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched it yet tonight. but neither one of us have seen Pieces, which is the second movie in the double feature.
And it looks god-awful.
It does. It looks pretty amazing.
It's a 1983 horror slasher crap fest.
One of the taglines is, like, you don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre.
Yeah.
But they're both Grindhouse releasing films.
Yep.
What
was the one movie you watched?
I watched Short Circuit.
The original?
Yeah.
Wow.
We went,
Remember Johnny Pipe?
Yeah, well, Fisher Stevens and Brownface.
Yeah.
Pretending to be an Indian guy.
With an accent that would make a pool look tame.
Yeah.
Basically.
We went to Jesse and Jason's house. Kate and Jesse go downstairs and work out, and they watch Sister Act. And then Johnny and Jason and I, we sit upstairs and we watch...
Way too many J's.
I know. We watch the movies that would be appropriate for Wesley, who's running back and forth. So that's why we watch, like, Gleaming the Cube or other similar tamer movies.
You people.
What?
Think about when we were Wesley's age.
Well, yeah, I know. I remember very vividly the first time I saw Chud, I was about Wesley's age, with my dad passed out in his chair with all the lights off at a strange house, because we were at my Aunt Clara's house watching it for them. And I had to pee, but I couldn't find the light switches to go to the bathroom, so I just peed in the sink because I was scared to death of Chud coming to get me. Yeah.
Logical.
Yeah.
That tracks.
Yeah.
So, Short Circuit, does it hold up?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I would not watch Short Circuit 2, probably.
No. No, that was a cash grab. But the first Short Circuit was definitely... it was a great movie. I remember
that. Yeah. The second one, first one's got, Steve Guttenberg and Ally Sheedy in it. And the second one's, they're married on their Montana farm and they send Johnny Five to go live with with Fisher Stevens' character in New York, who is now making little toy versions of Johnny. Short Circuit 2 is fucking garbage.
So I watched a movie and a half.
Yeah.
The half movie, I was watching it, and I was like, I don't care. And then my buddy reminded me that DC Fandom was coming on. I'm like, all right.
So what's the half movie?
The half movie was called The Sleepover, just released on Netflix this week.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. How it was that shitty, huh?
It's not shitty, but okay. It just wasn't keeping my interest. I'll probably finish watching it, but okay. It was okay.
All right.
Basically, the story is these kids are kind of losers at school. Malin Ackerman is their mom, and she also works the school. But
that's who that is.
Turns out... And she's married to Ken Marino, but yeah. We come to find out fairly soon that she's in witness protection because she was part of a gang that, you know, robbed people and robbed banks and stuff like that.
Sure.
So she's in witness protection, and then one of the kids at the school makes a video and puts it online, and she's in it. And so her crew finds her, and they drag her in for one more job. And her ex-boyfriend is, I just had his name, Joe Mangiello.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So you got Ken Marino over here, and he's like, oh, my God, looking at Joe Mangiello. And he's like, but the one movie that I did watch, I'm going to give you a hard sell on this one. It's an old one. It's from, like, 2016, but it showed up recently on Netflix. It's called Killing Hasselhoff.
Oh, that's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. Ken Jeong, Will Sasso, David Hasselhoff.
No, I'm sold.
John Lovitz. You got to watch this movie. It's like every time you turn around, there's another person. You're like, oh, it's them. Oh, it's them. Oh, it's them. And it's just so good. The basic premise of it is that these buddies made a Deadpool.
Yeah.
Celebrity death pool. And they each put $500 in. And now years later, it's worth like over $500,000. And Ken Jeong's pick was David Hasselhoff because he's a wild man.
Sure.
And that's all I'm going to say. The movie is phenomenal. It's not a masterpiece, but it is just fun as fuck to watch.
All right, I'll check it out.
Yeah, check it out. It's great. There were a bunch of trailers.
Yeah, I didn't send you any trailers.
Nope.
You sent me a bunch. Go.
Coastal Elites.
Yeah.
A remote distance HBO movie with basically people who are cream of the crop of the left wing.
Yes.
Looks interesting.
It does look interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
This one I hadn't even heard of. It's a Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of this one either, but I believe it actually looks good. It's more of a documentary.
It's called Skin, A History of Nudity in Movies.
Yeah.
And it goes back to like the first times that there were nude people on film, and then how it was exploited, and then where we've come to today. You know, there's everything from old black and white stuff to Shannon Elizabeth talking about how if she hadn't gone topless in American Pie, she wouldn't have had a career.
Correct.
You know, so and different people who are talking about whether or not it was a good choice for them or if they felt pressured. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing it. There was one called The Binge.
Yeah.
Which, what's his name there? Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
He plays a principal, I guess, at a school. And it's basically The Purge, except for instead of murder and crime, it's drugs and alcohol.
Yep.
Eh. I probably won't check it out unless I've got nothing else to watch. Utopia.
That looks interesting.
It does look interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, Death on the Nile.
That looks great. That's the new Poirot movie, Agatha Christie there.
Yeah.
Hercule Poirot. Murder mystery, whodunit. That looks really good.
Another star-studded cast.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Love Guaranteed looks really good. This was it's Damon Wayans Jr.
Yes.
Basically goes to Rachel Lee Cook. You know, we got a couple of three-name people.
Yeah.
And he says to her that he's been on like 867 dates from this one dating site, and he's never found love, so he wants to sue them.
Because they have Love Guaranteed is their motto on this dating site. And he has dossiers on everyone he went on a date with. It's hilarious.
Which are hilarious. But then, you know, the other people in Rachel Lee Cook's law firm are like, you've never done online dating. How can you take a case if you don't know the product? So they make her go out on a few dates. Of course, you know, they're going to end up together in the end. But Heather Graham's in it. She's the one that runs the company. So, yeah, it looks pretty good. And then... this wasn't a real trailer, but I sent you something that a buddy of mine sent me. This was the Retro Justice League trailer.
Oh, that was awesome.
Somebody took time and pieced together clips from the Michael Keaton Batman movie, the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, Linda Carter as Wonder Woman, and John Wesley Shipp in the Flash TV series.
Yes.
And put all these clips together of the different villains, the different heroes, and they made a trailer for a Justice League movie that I would watch the fucking shit.
Oh, I would too. They clipped it together excellently. Since my buddy Brandon, he was a big fan of it.
Yeah, it was good. And then we just got news, and then we'll probably just stop for now, and then we'll talk about these two movies on the way home, or we might not.
Yeah.
So news, Lawrence Fishburne is not going to be in the next Matrix movie. He says he has not been invited.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure why he hasn't been invited.
That's interesting.
Warrior Nun has been renewed for a second season.
Okay.
Thought you might be interested in that.
All right.
Now, this is one of those things. They said that Olivia Wilde is set to direct a movie, a Marvel movie,
yep,
for Sony.
Okay.
That will be female-led.
Yes, I saw that. And then she...
So basically, it's Spider-Woman.
Well, and she tweeted a spider emoji gimmick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, Olivia Wilde, which she did Booksmart. I really like that.
I did enjoy Booksmart as well.
She's probably going to be doing Spider-Woman for Sony.
Exactly.
And I wonder if this is also going to have a tie into the MCU.
Probably. Maybe. Oh, good.
And this was interesting, and it's more just like trivial news, but Clark Gregg and Jennifer Grey are getting divorced.
Okay.
Coulson and baby. It's too bad. They've been together for almost 20 years, and they're being very amicable about it. So, yeah. The last thing that I will talk about news-wise was DC Fandom Day 1 was today.
Yep. You sent me the new Wonder Woman trailer.
Yep. There's a new Wonder Woman trailer where we get to see that Cheetah is actually CGI by the end of it.
Yep. By the end of the trailer. I don't know about when it's going to take place in the movie.
Right, right. And there's, you know, I was talking with you about some of the news that they had out of that. The Flash movie is going to introduce the multiverse to the DC Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, and that makes the news we got the other day, how Ben Affleck's coming back as Batman in the new Flash movie.
Yep.
But Michael Keaton also is going to be Batman in the new Flash movie. So.
Yep. And apparently Batman will be making Flash's new suit. We got a brief glimpse of it.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad, Jesus Christ. There's
talk about a cast.
Yeah, there's 18 people.
Yeah,
on the Suicide Squad, and that includes Amanda Waller and Rick Flagg. But yeah, so that means that there are 16 different villains as part of the Suicide Squad this time. Some of them are returning.
Yeah,
Jai Courtney, Rick Flagg's the same, Amanda Waller's the same, Margot Robbie is playing Harley Quinn again, and then we've got some new ones. Peter Capaldi is the Thinker.
Ah, that's awesome!
I'm so fucking excited about that.
Nathan Fillion is TDK.
Yep. John Cena is in there as basically an asshole version of Captain America.
Sure. Idris Elba.
Peacemaker.
Yeah. Is it Idris Elba?
Yep.
It's going to be Deadshot.
No, Bloodsport.
I mean, Bloodsport. Jesus. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, because they couldn't get Will Smith to come back for Deadshot.
Yeah.
And then the last one that I got when we got here to the drive-in, my buddy sent me a thing. He was like, hey, are you watching the Snyder panel? And I was like, no, because I'm not really interested. But I asked him if I was missing anything, and apparently they're changing a lot. Surprise, surprise. It'll be released on HBO Max as 4 1-hour chunks. And then eventually as a single 4-hour monstrosity.
Oh, the new Snyder Cut.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
4 hours, Mike. 4 1-hour chunks.
Wasn't the Ultimate Edition of Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice like really fucking long as it was? Wasn't it like 3.5 hours?
I know that at the 3-minute mark, I was like, this movie is too long.
Yeah, so, I get that. Yeah. But we watched the extended cut. Hold on, I'm just going to cheat here. I'm going to look it up.
Mike's looking it up right now on his magical phone device.
How long is the extended cut of that god-awful fucking movie, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice?
Google's not going to know what to do with that.
Here is information from Wikipedia.
Hour and 152 minutes.
152 minutes.
It found it.
So that's 2 hours and 32 minutes.
Yeah.
This is going to be an hour and a half longer than that.
Yeah.
And you're the one that said that we have to watch it.
Yeah, we do.
4 hours.
I know.
Of our lives.
I know. We have to watch it.
God, I hate you sometimes.
Well, that's just the way it is, brother.
All right. So what do you say? Do we want to sign off here or do we just want to stop?
Oh, no. We'll just take a pause for now.
All right.
And we'll come back and talk about these other two flicks when we're done.
Yeah. All right, so we're back. nothing, no time has passed for you guys, but for us, we just enjoyed / endured 4 hours of breathtaking cinema.
Well, 3 hours.
3 hours,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But, okay, so we had The Evil Dead, which we love.
Yes.
It's my favorite flick. So seeing it at the, you know, we saw it 10 years ago at the Nickelodeon in Portland when they had, when Grindhouse releasing at a 35mm print they were touring. We went to Evil Dead the Musical 2013, and then tonight we were at the drive-in for Grindhouse releasing's drive-in release this summer. So
now bear in mind, this is the original The Evil Dead. This is not Evil Dead 2, which was made after Sam Raimi, you know, basically tested it to audiences and realized it was more of a comedy than a horror movie.
Sure.
So he kind of remade Evil Dead into Evil Dead 2, and that's where we get, like, the hand cutting off and, you know, all the classic iconic stuff. This was the original movie.
Right.
And
from filmed in 81, released in 83.
Yep.
So,
And it's just, it's great cinema. Yeah. I still like Evil Dead 2 better.
No, I get that.
And Army of Darkness was phenomenal.
Yep. Ash vs. Evil Dead's amazing.
Yes.
I really enjoy the, just quote-unquote, Evil Dead.
Yep.
It's not a remake. It's not a reimagining. It's a, according to Bruce Campbell, it's a parallel universe.
Yes.
Where the Book of the Dead, the Necronomicon, still exists. So,
yep. The one with Jane Levy. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist,
and that
which is still phenomenal.
Super violent and awesome.
Yep.
Hey, speaking of Jane Levy, I noticed on the CWC they got Suburgatory.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a great show.
Yeah, it was. So we watched that, and then at the intermission,
Carly Chacon from Mr. Robot.
Yes.
Played Dahlia.
Yes. At intermission, we saw the Batman trailer.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
Well, it's interesting. It's dark. It's kind of gothic. I feel like they showed us 2.5 minutes, but I didn't get a really good feel for it because it's so dark.
Yeah, no, I didn't get a sense of what it's about.
Oh, that guy's in a very big hurry to pass us.
Yes, he definitely was.
I mean, you're going, what, like
60?
Yeah, and he just blew right by us. But yeah, I didn't get a good sense. And again, the lighting. Like, I'm not talking dark as in, like, morbid. I'm talking dark as in, like, it was hard to see some of the stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's got that Zack Snyder wash on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, after that, we got the second feature of the night, Pieces, also Grindhouse releasing, came out in 1983.
Now, the trailer that Mike sent me when he said, hey, there's a double feature of The Evil Dead and Pieces at the drive-in.
And neither one of us have seen Pieces before.
Right. So, the trailer was a Grindhouse-type trailer. It basically showed a guy. I thought he was wearing, like, a bag on his head, like Leatherface style.
Now, I don't recall that. I do know it was basically like, we can't show you any parts of Pieces because it's too horrible for us to show you.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those,
but it was
like
a guy with a chainsaw, and he's, like, revving it.
You don't have to go to Texas to see a chainsaw massacre.
Yeah. So I was expecting a Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of thing, or Hills Have Eyes. You know, something that was just gory, over-the-top violence.
Yep.
I knew it was going to be a piece of shit. But I was excited about that because, you know, sometimes you just want a piece of shit.
Right, yeah. Sometimes you just want to watch a crap movie.
Yeah.
Because you enjoy it. You know, you want the gratuitous nudity. You want the violence and the gore and the blood.
Yeah. It's like some of those people who like watching Real Housewives, you know?
Yeah.
They just want trash TV.
I would never watch that.
Or you know, you just want box wine, or you know, you want the Hydrox cookies instead of Oreos.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you just want crap.
Yep.
And god damn it, did we get some beautiful crap.
Okay, so I don't know. Okay, here's my suggestion. This is the last thing we're going to talk about on the show.
Yeah.
So if you have not seen this movie, fucking go out of your way, go watch it. Do not listen to what we're about to say. If you have seen
it, if you want a trashy horror movie.
Like, seriously, if you want a ridiculously absurd movie where, as we sat through the movie watching it, I kept going, is this dubbed? Like, it kept those times where either the voice track was off a hair or it was actually dubbed.
Yep.
We did find out that the movie was filmed in Boston and in Madrid, Spain. Boston, Mass., Madrid, Spain. When I was reading the IMDb page, it said that it was originally, the original languages, it was English, Spanish, and Italian. So maybe people that were speaking a foreign language, they dubbed it into English. But there was also times when the lead actors sounded like they were being dubbed.
Yeah. Or, and, like, or their lips didn't move very much, but you heard voices.
And so then it's like, well, maybe they just did some really bad looping. I don't know, but here's what I do know. We have a college. We have a bunch of kids being killed in a college.
Excuse me, you skipped over the most important part.
We have the cold open.
Which takes place in 1942.
Yeah.
Where, inside of a house that looks strangely like it's out of the 70s.
Yeah. A little boy is putting together a puzzle of a naked woman.
Yep.
His mother comes in like, oh, look, it's so nice. You're doing a puzzle. Oh, my God, you heathen. And then she starts slapping the shit out of him. This kid doesn't react.
Yeah.
He stands up and takes a step back, but he, like, doesn't sell the slaps.
What do you think? He was, like, 9, 10 years old?
9, 10, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. 9 or 10, and then fast forward, it takes place 40 years later, and now the character's, like, 60.
Yeah.
Anyhow. So he's 9 or 10, and he's like, and basically mom's like, you're a piece of shit like your father. Go get me a plastic bag. Definitely not 1942.
Yeah, because she wants a plastic bag because she's going to burn all of this stuff.
So she starts looking
through it. It's a puzzle.
Yeah.
It's a small puzzle. This is like a 100-piece puzzle.
It's like an 8x10, it's like an 8x10 size puzzle. You know, it's not a big puzzle.
Yeah.
She starts looking through his stuff. He comes back with an axe and just fucking pops her in the skull like 3 or 4 times.
But you need to understand, this movie was shit. This movie was the drizzling shits, as Mike would say.
Yeah.
So, like, when he pops her in the head with the axe, it bounces off her head.
It does.
And there's,
it does.
There's like, no mark or anything. Yeah. And then he has to do it 2 or 3 more times before they finally put, like, fake blood on there.
Yeah. And then when she's lying there dead, you do see an axe mark on her head. But that was definitely post. But, and as John said, it's god-awful shit movie, but I enjoyed the fuck out of it.
Oh, I did too. I treasured every minute of this shit.
I thoroughly enjoyed the fuck out of this movie. I mean, you know, so after he kills his mom, police show up with some lady that knocked on the door and instantly had this intuition something was wrong. They find mom's head. They find boy in the closet going, with my mom, with my mom. And then boom, 40 years later.
Yeah, because the housekeeper says that there's an aunt that lives like a town over, and I'll take the boy to her.
Yeah.
And then, 40 years later. And we get almost another cold opening. I mean, basically, there's a girl who's like on the campus quad by herself, by some bushes, laying there with her feet up in the air, trying to do some studying, and the groundskeeper's out there with a chainsaw.
And she's all like, if you're going to be a while, I'll move. And he's like, just a minute, man.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, some other guy comes charging right up on her with a chainsaw and kills her dead.
Just takes her head.
He just takes her head off, leaves the rest of the body there.
And that's
the opening of the 40 years later.
Yeah. And then after that, basically, we see the killer, who just breathes heavy and wears, you know, leather gloves, and he has a chainsaw.
Because that's the mystery. We're not supposed to know who it is.
And he walks around with this chainsaw, like, holding it like it's a fucking penis.
Yeah, like, it's very phallic.
It is definitely a phallic symbol. And he basically, the pieces part comes from he's piecing a girl together by killing different girls and taking their body parts to make a full body.
Because for some reason, even though he killed his mom, he saved her shoes and her dress with the bloodstains all over them, and he saved the puzzle of the naked lady.
Well, don't forget the picture of her he had with the X drawn.
Yes, a black and white photo of her mom, that looked like a headshot.
With a red X.
Yep, red X that's like glued to the bottom of the box. He had a hard time ripping it out of there. Ha ha. But he puts the puzzle back together, and as he puts it together, like, he puts the head. And then he gets the head of the girl. And then he does the torso with the breastises because, you know, he got that from the girl in the pool.
Yeah.
And he's
killing...
And then he does
the arms and the legs. And So it's and then there's some just absurd police work going on where they basically deputize one of the college kids because, you know, he's a great kid and we can trust him. We have no basis for this other than the lieutenant's word, and he just met the fucker for the first time.
Yeah, and he says, I would put my life on the line for this kid. I would trust him with my life. So
yeah.
Just met this kid.
So, you know, and then there's this undercover female officer who is apparently also a tennis pro, but doesn't make any fucking money being a tennis pro, so she's a police officer. And dude, hold on a second. It fucking poured where we are. Look how wet the road is.
Yeah, look at that.
Puddles. It didn't rain at all at the drive-in 5 miles up the road, but clearly it rained like fucking crazy here.
Welcome to Maine.
Yeah. Anyhow. So, the undercover officer is just kind of bobbing around campus one night doing her job looking for something, and all of a sudden, low-rent Bruce Lee attacks her.
Yeah, out of the blue, this guy in a tracksuit, blue and white striped tracksuit, just jumps out and starts kung-fu-ing the fuck out of him.
Kicks the camera out, it kicks the flashlight out of her hand.
Yeah.
Then she pulls her gun, he fucking kicks that out of her hand too. And he's like, wah, flipping all around. And then she falls down, and he goes to jump on her, and she apparently kicks him in the nuts.
I think that was it, but I never saw the kick.
I don't know.
He just suddenly, like, stopped with his legs spread and then fell over face first into the gravel.
Yeah, and then he laid there, and she's like, oh, wow. And then, you know, the college kid, whiz kid, shows up, who apparently is a big stud on campus and fucks everybody.
Yep.
He shows up on his, you know, dirt bike that is just convenient because it sounds like a motorcycle.
No, it sounds like a chainsaw.
And he's like, hey, Mary, saw you from after I got done fucking a girl, and they accidentally put my erect penis on camera. Anyways, and I figured I'd grab my bike and come down and see who it is. Well, don't ride that again. It sounds like a chainsaw. Like, that's actual dialogue in the movie.
And then he asks her what happened, and she goes, I don't know, this guy jumped out of nowhere and started attacking me.
And he's like,
oh, that's my kung fu professor. Because that's a fucking thing in college, is a kung fu professor.
And then the guy just pops up, and he's like, hey, man, I was just going for a run. Next thing I knew, I was on the ground. And then they did, like, you know, street high five, and then he ran off.
No. You forgot the best line. He goes, it must have been something bad I ate.
Like,
go ahead.
Like, bad chop suey. Later, man.
And he was so racist. See you, Raider.
Yeah.
See you, Raider.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And then runs off. And that was it. That was the Asian person in the movie.
And Mary's like, ha, ha, what a misunderstanding. Yeah, so...
Holy shit.
Without giving away the killer.
Okay? Yeah, let's preserve that mystery because you know, this is going to go down in the annals of history as one of the classics.
So, the movie gets
Let's not ruin the movie for everyone.
So, all right, the killer's been caught. Mary's safe because she was in peril again, you know. The cops show up, killer's dead. They haul the killer's dead body out of there. The sergeant says to Kendall, still want to be a police officer? And he's like, oh, I'm thinking about it. And he goes to lean on a bookshelf.
He goes, you should join the force because we find little clues like this all the time.
Yeah, crazy shit like this all the time. And he goes to lean on this bookshelf, which then flips around.
Scooby-Doo style.
Yeah, and the pieced together dead body of Mom with the dress on and everything falls forward, landing on Kendall, causing him
to screams. Oh my god, he screams like it's like 30 seconds of him just high pitching in slow motion. It's epic.
It's fucking awesome. So,
how this kid didn't get an Oscar, I'll never know.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to be in that lane, by the way.
So they haul him away. So then we do like a fucking scene swipe, and now we're reset, and Mary's gone to the hospital with the lieutenant. And they're hauling out the dead body of the killer.
Now it's just the sergeant and Kendall standing there.
And he just goes, so Kendall, you still want to be a police officer? And Kendall's like, I don't know about that. And he's like, well, let's get out of here. And he stops to look down at the sheet on the ground because apparently everybody's leaving, but leaving the piece together corpse there behind.
Yeah.
You know, the little Frankenstein type corpse.
They're just going to leave her there. Yeah. You know, why not?
Right. And then Kendall's like, oh, my jacket. And he reaches back to grab his jacket. And in the greatest fucking finale scene of any movie of all time.
Never saw this one coming.
No. Like, I was... No. fucking no. All of a sudden, The corpse's fucking hand jumps up, grabs Kendall right by his dick and tears it from his body. Yeah,
starts scratching and pulling down, and there's like claw marks and blood, and then like crushes it like a fucking overripe tomato. Just
rips his dick off right through his jeans. And the last scene is Kendall screaming, which he would be screaming.
And we freeze on his screaming face.
Yeah, freeze frame, roll fucking credits. Done.
And the credits,
masterpiece.
Dude, it was
masterpiece.
The credits were just like the name of the person and the character they played.
Yeah.
And then
that's it.
This was filmed on location at University of Boston, or in Boston, Massachusetts, and Madrid, Spain.
Yeah.
Copyright 1983. Like,
done.
Nothing. No sound editor, yeah. No filmography, no editing, no nothing.
Yeah, no, not fucking, no credits,
bro. Dude, like, this was a masterpiece.
I'm going to fucking buy this on DVD.
I'm going to have to buy this.
Yeah.
This was amazing.
I'm definitely going to buy this on DVD.
Did you actually just slow down because you saw a
trailer? No. I only slowed down because for some reason he has his fucking spotlight on.
Oh.
Shining across two lanes of highway into the woods. I was trying to see what was in the woods.
Oh.
And gotcha. No, I didn't slow down. I'm going 10 over.
Yeah, because it's the highway. And
yeah. Fuck it.
Highway cops do not pull people over for speeding.
Not at night.
No.
Well, they do if they're going like 25 to 30.
Yeah, you got to be really giving them a reason. And then they're going to give you a ticket because they're pissed.
Right. Because you made them pull you over and get out of there.
Yeah. They got better things to do.
I have insider knowledge about this.
As do I. Yeah.
So, this movie, I got to say, wow. I couldn't have predicted the ending.
Nobody could have predicted
you
that
know, ending. How did you describe who wrote this movie?
It literally, the dialogue in this felt like it was written by either a seventh grader or somebody who never mentally progressed past the seventh grade. And I mean that. I literally mean that. Like, the dialogue was so stilted in this. There were things like the lieutenant actually said to the sergeant at one point, he said, I want you to do background checks on everybody in the university. Go ahead and spend the entire precinct's budget if you have to.
And the sergeant smiles. The lieutenant goes, I thought you'd like the sounds of that.
Yeah.
Like
this, the dialogue. There was one guy, the groundskeeper, who was supposed to be the red herring. And every time he'd come on screen, he'd always squint and look suspicious.
Yeah.
Like he was trying to look suspicious. They had one scene where he just like walked in a door and stood behind the crowd of people. For no reason. Like, nobody said, hey, what's he doing there? He just, like, walked in like, oh, crap, I was supposed to be here. They've already started filming. I better just sneak onto the set. And they filmed the whole thing.
His right eye was in a perpetual squint.
Yes.
Just his right eye.
Yes. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like Kendall satisfied some woman sexually in bed, and she kept, like, asking him. She's like, can we do it again, Kendall? Maybe you could gag me. Then I wouldn't say so much. Because he said to her, he was like, why you gotta be so noisy? Everyone on campus is gonna know what we're doing, that I just rocked your world.
No, he goes, are people gonna think someone's killing you with a chainsaw in here? You're screaming so loud. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah. And she's like, come on. Can you please come back to bed? Can we do it again? You could gag me. Then I wouldn't make any noise.
Maybe that's where Randall there. I can't think of his name. Jason. Randall on How I Met Your Mother. Jason Segel.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's where he got the line for forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Well,
you want to gag me?
Now I kind of now.
But no,
I doubt it, but no, yeah.
But still, there was just tremendous amounts of amazingness in this film.
It was so, like, and that's the thing. Like we said at the beginning of this, we went into this knowing it was going to be trash. We thought it was going to be a different kind of trash.
Right.
But we went out tonight specifically to watch trash movie.
Yeah.
And what was it, Mike? Like 3 minutes in, I turned to Mike and I went, well, we've already gotten our money's worth.
The fucking, yeah, when the title card came on, you're like, well, I've got my money's worth.
I mean, it was just, this was magnificent garbage.
It really was.
There's a lot of
crappy 80s horror movies out there that you watch them and you're just like, all right, well, this is shit. I don't even want to watch the rest of this. So you shut it off.
Yeah.
No, we could have started the engine and left at any time.
And I was surprised more people didn't. Like, yeah. A lot of people took off between the movies because they were like, ah, we only want one movie. It looks like somebody vomited on the way out.
Yeah, a good 90% of the people left after Evil Dead.
But the ones that stuck around stuck through.
Oh, yeah. No one left midway through this film.
It was a testament to willpower and sheer morbid curiosity.
Of course, for us, every time we saw a vehicle leaving during Evil Dead, it was like, well, they're done having sex. Or like, after, like, the first 5 minutes of the movie, this vehicle left, and you're like, wow, that didn't take her long.
Yeah.
So, like,
Everybody knows why some people go to the drive-in.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, anyway. I don't know. I was very pleased with the second feature.
That was the highlight of the night for me, really.
Realistically, it was for reasons... I thought it was going to be, like, a Texas Chainsaw Massacre type.
Yeah.
Horror movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just like over-the-top gore.
Oh, yes, over-the-top killing, over-the-top gore, just fucking
and granted,
like,
this
mindless
one had
violence.
Plenty, like, this guy was vivisecting people, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to the skateboard girl?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, that's the other thing, too, yeah, I forgot.
There was this part of the cold opening where this girl who's skateboarding down the street, and these two guys come out with, they're carrying a mirror, like what... Like, you see in a cartoon where they're carrying a mirror across the street, and she screams, goes, ah-ha! And slams into the mirror. For no reason.
We don't see her hit the glass mirror. We just see, like...
From the backside of the mirror.
Like, the mirror break. But we don't know what happens when they don't talk about it.
Yeah.
We get the boy killing the mom. We get the opening credits.
But
and then we get her skateboarding through campus and crashing into the mirror. And then we jump to the girl getting fucking her head cut off.
Yeah. So, I thought
that
we were
true.
Just going to see...
That's true.
Yeah. So, there was definitely gratuitous violence. Because, like we said, this guy was walking around with his penis chainsaw. And he was taking only the body parts that he needed. So, like, one girl, he literally just chopped off her arms.
Okay.
And then...
That's the one I want to talk about.
Yes, please do.
This is a dancer. Okay, what are dancers known for? Their legs.
Yes.
Because that's the term, dancer's legs. It's not dancer's arms. No one gives a fuck about them.
And he needed legs, and we thought he was moving to the legs.
Because these were dancers, and their legs were so emphasized, I assumed we're getting legs from this girl. Nope, arms. Regardless. So she's in the dance studio alone practicing, which we've determined this was a dance lesson... Sorry, dance class for strippers.
Yes.
The
moves
dance
that
maneuvers.
She was doing and the provocativeness and the sticking the legs up in the air. I mean, this was stripper class.
Absolutely. So, she starts panicking because she feels like someone's coming after her. Then we see her run through this building. This must have been a 10-story fucking building. This girl went down so many flights of stairs, so many hallways. Backtracked. I mean, finally she gets to an elevator.
I'm pretty sure it was the same building that played the university.
Oh, I'm sure it was. She gets to the elevator, and she's all panicky, and then finally, like, the elevator comes, and she gets startled by the killer, because we can tell based on his arm and the gloves, and she's just like, oh, it's you. And she doesn't express why she was concerned. She just gets in the elevator, waits calmly for him to get in. He steps in the elevator, and he's holding the chainsaw behind his back.
Yeah.
So she can't see it somehow. Now, so he manages to get in and close the door behind him somehow. Then the camera cuts into the elevator. It's like fucking 3 foot by 3 foot.
Yeah.
He's not, and there's no way he's hiding the chainsaw behind his back anymore. And she pushes the button for it to start. 2 seconds later, he pushes the button for it to stop. And she's like, what are you doing? And then he just fucking revs the chainsaw. We cut two before he revs it. He's holding in front of him, directly in front of him, like it's his dick. And it's like she didn't see it the whole time. Then he fucking powers it on, and she's like, oh my God! And then boom, boom, one arm, second arm, done.
Leaves the rest of her.
Yeah.
And the police actually say, Kendall says, she's alive. We're going to catch this guy. And then we see the
doctor, quote unquote?
Yeah, this doctor guy, and the lieutenant asks him, he's like, so how's she doing? He's like, I've done all I can. Between the blood loss and the massive trauma.
Never in a million years.
Yeah, not a chance in a million. And when they heard her scream on the elevator, Kendall and two beat patrol officers ran up to the door, which was barred. Like, it had those
the gate.
A gate, yes, across it, that opens from the outside. And Kendall's yelling at these two officers as he's running up on it, going, it's locked, it's locked, it's locked. Like, they can see that it's locked.
Right.
So he shakes it once and then goes, hold on, it's locked from the inside. I'll climb in through the window and open it from the inside. The window is 2 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And it is large enough for any normal human being to fit through.
It's literally large enough for all three of them to fit through at once.
So Kendall jumps in, and the two of them just stand there and stare at it like, oh boy, I hope he opens up that door for us.
Which he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they run to, of course, Kendall opens the elevator first after he hits the button 1,000 times because it's taking too long.
They keep saying, come on, come on, come on, come on.
He opens the door, sees the armless girl, blood everywhere, and goes, oh, God. And then one of the officers looks at him. He starts throwing up. And the other one just puts his hands in his, you know, the fucking officers become useless. And the hero Kendall's like, you, go call the lieutenant. Now, there's a phone in the janitor's office, and pushes him away. Well, later on, we find out that the phone in the janitor's office is behind lock and key, and only Shifty Eye guy can get you in there.
Okay, hold on. So, this is, again, why I feel that this was written by a seventh grader. Because he not only says, go call the lieutenant, there's a phone in the janitor's office down there.
Yeah.
He then says, dial zero to get an outside line.
Yeah.
Because somebody was like, ooh, we want to make this realistic. Yeah. Let's make sure we add that in there. I mean, of all the things to dial zero for an outside line, like anybody's fact-checking this and they're going, okay, good, good. I'm glad they said that because, you know, this is a university. I'm sure that they'd have to dial something to get an outside line.
So I know Grindhouse Releasing has a collector's edition that they made of this movie.
How do you know that?
Because I see it advertised by them all the time.
Really?
Yes. So I'm going to look to see if it has a director's commentary because...
Oh, God, please let it have a director's commentary.
If it has a director's commentary,
we're watching
I'm
it again.
Buying that fucking version.
And we're watching it together.
With the commentary. Oh, yes. With the commentary. I need the director or writer to justify the shit in this movie. Oh, gosh.
Wow.
Yeah. So, again, we're expecting some sort of shit movie. Shit in a good way.
Yeah.
And we got shit in a good way, but like the other end of the fucking rainbow.
Oh my God.
Oh, speaking of rainbow. The other red herring professor in the movie that we think is the killer.
Oh my God.
Who isn't.
Oh my God.
Must have a fake mustache. And then I wish
he kind of looked like Ron Burgundy.
Kinda. I wish I could remember the dialogue at the end.
I will tell you the dialogue.
Okay, it was the dean who says this. Yes.
The dean is talking to Mary,
yeah.
And she was asking questions about Professor Brown. And he actually says, oh, he's a homosexual. And she goes, really? And he goes, yes, he tried to kill me once. But he's quite perplexed with his condition. He's quite stricken with his
condition. Yeah.
His condition. Homosexuality is a condition in this world.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Between that and Kung Fu Panda there jumping up and saying, oh, chop suey, see you later.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. I know this was copyright 1983. I get that it was a different time. This did not age well.
No, that did not age
Holy
well.
Shit.
Not, but
I'm sorry, it wasn't condition, it was affliction.
Affliction, yes.
He's afflicted with homosexuality.
Yes.
It's an affliction. Holy fucking shit.
Yes.
Wow.
He wears douchebag t-shirts.
Wow.
Anyhow, I did enjoy the fuck out of the movie.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I'm very, very pleased that this was our double feature tonight.
I am, too. I could not be happier right now.
And when the movie was over, I did say to John, I think I'm going to buy this. No, wait, I am going to buy this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to seriously consider it as well because I feel like this will be a future litmus test for people.
Yeah.
Like I've got a buddy who likes horror movies. I want to sit down and watch this with him and see what his reaction is to it.
Well, I'm going to message my buddy Brandon and be like, have you seen this movie? Do so immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Johnny has to see this.
Oh, fuck yes.
Johnny likes horror movies.
Yes, Johnny must see this. Yes.
So, yeah. That being said, I hope everybody has enjoyed our traveling tour show.
Yeah, because this last bit here, we recorded on the drive home.
Yeah, covered about 20 miles.
Yeah. So, anyhow, thanks for listening. On the Twitter, I'm Superstar Mal.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33J. We'll talk to you next week if I can turn this on and stop it. We'll